Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Signal of Doom. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
Oh, I'm getting good, Dave. This is getting exciting this time of year, isn't it?
It's the Christmas season, Stu. Oh, my favourite season of all.
Even better, it's Star Wars season.
Star Wars. Yeah, it's only a week away, Stu, am I right?
Less than a week away at this point.
I can't wait. Last Jedi feels like it's been on the approach for a long time, much like a Star Destroyer approaching, you know, a planet.
I mean, the schedule that Star Wars has been running, like, we've known for 2 years when it's going to be out. We knew that this December was Star Wars time.
Sure.
It was a nice little breather when we got Rogue One a year ago. That was nice.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was fun. But now
I could do that every year for the rest of my life. Like,
oh, absolutely.
You know, like,
I'm happy to just book out December for the rest of all time.
Do you think, obviously it's coming out this week, do you think it's a chance of breaking Force Awakens' record? Or you think that was...
Yes.
Really?
I think in every way this is going to be a massive movie.
You don't think it's like an Avengers situation where Avengers 1's 200 mil and then Age of Ultron's 191, like almost there but not quite, like, you know?
I mean, potentially, but I mean, if you look at the Star Wars films, in the trilogies, the second movie's always outperformed the first.
Mm. Oh, yeah, wouldn't surprise me. I mean,
So we've had two Star Wars trilogies completed so far, and the second movie has always outperformed the first.
Did Empire Strikes Back do better than Star Wars?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Look, I mean, I'm pumped for it, and it is going to be fascinating to see what even the story is, because we know really nothing about the story. They kind of cloak any mystery, don't they?
Yeah, we've kind of got little breadcrumbs that we put together, but like... not much.
A lot less.
Which I love. I love that the trailers are showing us what we want to see.
Some cool images.
We see images, we see fight scenes, we see characters.
Don't forget, Stu, the walkers now have the gorilla paws. I hope you've been noticing it. To the tactical hand, they have them. Seriously.
Yeah, and they've also got more body armor as well. They've got a spiked leg, so you can't tie them up with the fighter jets anymore.
Shit. When I was playing in my game, the Empire Strikes Back game as a kid, where you had to go up against the walkers, I would have struggled if they had the spikes and the different paws. Because back in the game, this is on the Atari, guys, for those that are dialing back to the early 80s like me, a little spot, I don't know if you've ever seen the game on YouTube, like a little blip would appear where you had to fire your snow speeder at to blow them up.
Yeah.
It's quite cool. And there was no version of winning. You could never win the game. You fought until you died.
I love those games.
That was awesome. Like, it was the ultimate in just kids, good luck.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, yes, it's pointless. Yes, war is hell, kids.
Yeah. But enjoy sinking 100 hours into this game.
Now, Stu, what about you? I mean, I was Batman this week or yesterday. I'm Batman. I put that voice on many times when I wore it to my work Christmas party, the Batman suit.
That's a good look, Dave.
It was a good look. I got quite some compliments. There was a joke at my expense. The singer in the band came dressed as Batman and he got the Best Batman Award. That was quite funny. Everyone
that
had
hurts.
A good joke.
That hurts.
I was like, I'm okay, I'm okay. I did a bit of comedy for the crowd. but the tears were actually real. It was method acting.
Real tears with fake bravado. Well
yeah,
done,
yeah, it was method acting.
Yeah.
There was a Catwoman, Stu. There was Black Widow. There was a Hit Girl. The Superman was there. There was like a Stormtrooper, two Stormtroopers, and a Darth Vader.
What was the theme for this, Dave?
Theme was favourite character.
Whose favourite character is random Stormtrooper number 341?
I don't know. Stormtroopers are cool. But I think they were coming as a group. So it was one of the officers, interstate, and they came as a group. One of the account managers, I won't bore the listeners with their actual names, but she came as Darth Vader, and so they were her sort of minions, the Stormtroopers. So it was pretty good. And get this,
you've got to love your job when you're showing up to be someone else's costume minion.
Yeah, well, exactly. And there was no minions, Stu. I would have loved it.
Perfect,
minion.
Perfect.
But to be a minion...
This sounds like a great party.
To be a minion, you'd have to kind of be a midget, but a really small midget.
So, you also have to have given up on life.
I don't know if that's politically incorrect. to say like a really small midget. You would have to be like sort of infant size midget. Don't know if that exists. Doesn't sound healthy if it does. But regardless, there were no.
What are they doing working at a company like that? That doesn't make sense.
They're just waiting for their one chance to be a fucking minion.
So sad.
Yeah, but anyway.
So Dave's rolling in this morning. Little dusty or?
Well, no, I only had a, I'm not a huge drinker, a bit of a lightweight really. I had a few beers, had a tequila shot. That got the blood pumping in the system. But I was okay this morning. I've got my Gatorade and stuff. I'm okay. You know, I wouldn't say I'm optimal. I've got a Fitbit shoe. I've got to walk 10,000 steps a day now. Part of this new fitness program. I've given up iced tea. I'm a changed man, Stu.
Ooh, wow.
And this has been going all of about 4 days.
Yeah. 10,000 steps and no iced tea.
No iced tea at all. Forget about the ginger nut biscuits that I like to dispatch late at night. That's gone. Yeah, I mean,
your hardcore party days are over. That's what I'm hearing.
I'm obviously off the crack cocaine as well.
Actually, there's not many calories in crack.
Oh, really?
It's actually pretty healthy, yeah.
I'm sure it's healthy, Stu.
Yeah.
I saw what it did to Whitney Houston.
Get you up doing exercise, middle of the night.
Yeah. You're up. I don't know if it's healthy. Yeah, but anyway. But I've got the last piece of Star Wars kind of gossip. I heard a snippet. You know I like sort of headlines. This is a headline of another podcast, so I haven't actually listened to it.
Classic Lois Lane reporting.
I can report this. Andy Gollum Circus, or Andy Caesar Circus, has claimed that Snoke is more powerful. Who I believe he's playing Snoke, to make this comment, I assume.
He is, yeah, he is.
Okay, that clarifies that for me. He is more powerful than the Emperor or Darth Vader. I don't know if that's combined, but or just one-on-one more powerful. It's according to Andy Circus.
That's a big call.
When you say where he's playing him, and he's, and like, isn't Snoke, it's not actually a real person, is it? Like, it's not like he's not Andy Serkis dressed up or something. I don't understand. How's Andy Serkis involved here? Is it, when I looked at Snoke, I thought he looked completely CGI.
It's the same as, like, when he plays Caesar in Planet of the Apes, when he plays
Caesar Gollum. Looks way more real. So, like, you can tell there's a face there.
Same thing. Snoke's... Oh, it's Jesus. All motion capture.
Oh, here we go again. So, like, yeah, okay. Like, I'm so fucking sick of this guy. Like, and, like, he's cornered one little thing. He gets way too much praise. That's my opinion. Like...
Oh, no, I'm in the opposite camp.
Really?
We need more Andy Serkis praise. The dude's incredible.
He's good, I guess. I don't know. Like, when I saw... I'm trying to remember... I guess what I'm trying to say is I remember Snoke from Force Awakens. It wasn't blowing me away. It looked like he was kind of crazy.
I think that's kind of the point. He is crazy.
But do you not think you could do it, Stu? Like, I feel I could do that performance.
I feel like I could do a lot of things better than a lot of people. But
yeah,
getting out there, I would be terrible at it. Like, I would be terrible at this job.
No, but if you said to me you have to be Caesar with a whole nuanced performance, that's way harder than playing just a crazy guy, which is what Snoke seemed to be.
I don't know. I feel like I'd say yes, and then I'd get out there, and it would just be laughably bad.
Well, I'm pretty confident that I'd be fine. I don't know. Andy Serkis, he played Gollum, right?
Yeah.
That was a performance that
he was.
And
he was King Kong in Peter Jackson's run.
Yeah,
he
was... but what was he doing? King Kong doesn't talk.
Like, no, but it's the...
doesn't fucking talk at all.
Well, he does. He has...
that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, but like, it's not real talking. Like, like that is pretty much... Kong doesn't talk, does he? Unless I'm misremembering it.
I think
does he talk?
One or two words or something. Like, it's not a...
Since when do gorillas fucking talk?
Have you not seen Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
Where, like, every fucking gorilla talks?
Apes, they talk. Planet of the Apes, that's the concept of Planet of the Apes. But King Kong...
You understand that a King Kong is an ape, right?
But, I don't know. I'm not sure of my King Kong history. But did King Kong ever talk before fucking Kong?
I've no idea. I think there might have been like one word or something.
Well, that's bullshit. Maybe. Like, how many real gorillas have ever spoken? Ever? Like, anything other than that kind of stuff. Like, you know, that variations on that bullshit.
I like that you're worried that this is bending reality for you. You're not worried about the fact that he can climb the Empire State Building and he's like three stories tall.
Because it's possible. Like,
it's not possible. What are you on about?
He's a massive gorilla. Have you seen Kong Skull Island?
I have, yeah.
He's huge, man. He's massive in that. He's way bigger than a gorilla normally would be.
But you're worried that Kong shouldn't be able to talk.
Well, no, I just feel that you need to make a decision.
Sure, then. Grow to the point where you can knock helicopters out of the sky.
But I'm actually asking the question. Like, this is one for the fucking, you know, interns out there, the listeners. Please, just... I'm not going to go and watch old Kong movies. I can't remember what happened in Kong Skull Island or Kong by Peter Jackson. Did in any of the Kong movies, has he spoken? Okay? Ever. Like, I want to clarify that point firstly. Because if he's spoken, then there's an actual acting going on. Because if it's just facial, Stu, give me a break. Okay, Caesar speaks. Okay? Like, humans are bad. That kind of stuff he comes out with. Like, yeah, he does. He talks fully. That's a performance of actual acting. Just doing facial, man, at a certain point. Like, Gollum spoke, man. Like, if it's just like, oh, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm in between. Like, that's not... It's not an Oscar, I'm afraid. You know. Where are you on it? Like... Are you like one of these guys, like, we need to invent a whole category, give him an Oscar for just for turning up sort of thing?
Give him an Oscar for turning up? He honestly does deserve an Oscar. The dude has done amazing work that no one else on the planet has done.
But in his own category, not in terms of, like, actual acting.
Yeah, it's actual acting. But he is on a set acting.
I get that, man.
There are cameras, like, on him.
But it's also digitally altered and stuff as well. I'm just saying, if there's speech... Then he adds to it. But I'm not going to give acting just on
facial. If there's speech, he's just doing a voice.
Yeah, and that's right. A voice actor.
Like, what's the difference?
I don't know what the difference is. Like, if
you're claiming that voice acting is a real thing...
Yes, 100%.
So you think that sitting in a booth and not being able to actually act, but being able to record a voice... Similar to what we're doing right now.
Voice acting is a real thing. Is there an Oscar for that? I don't know if there is.
Yeah, I'm reasonably sure there is.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. That's voice acting.
Whereas acting without speaking in a non-speaking role...
It's bullshit, yeah.
No.
Put it this way. What I'm saying is, okay, there's some acting involved, but it's tough to...
So when he's playing Caesar, when he's playing Gollum...
He's speaking. He's speaking. In both those roles. That's actual acting. If he's just doing... my point is this. If it's just the face, okay? Like, is he doing the voice of Snoke? Or Snope, or however you say his stupid name? Like, is Andy
Serkis... Snoke, yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. Then I'm suddenly feeling more on board with it. I didn't realise he was doing the voice as well. I thought he was just doing the face. I'm confused with what he actually does.
I feel like you're just scared and confused with new technology. Like, you just...
I'm okay with it.
Missed the boat completely.
No, but, like, okay, let's just say this. Who won the Oscar last year for Best Acting? Do you know? I've got no idea. But, like, it's got to be someone.
You know. Shit, yeah, I can't...
Who fucking cares? But
wasn't it the guy in Midnight?
I have no idea. But, like, let's say Harrison Ford... let's say Harrison Ford won the Oscar, okay? Like, when he won the fucking Oscar. Just to use an example, okay? But he did it... Okay, let's just say Harrison Ford... Let's say Harrison Ford won the Oscar for one of my favourite movies of his, Random Hunts, okay? From, like, the late 90s. And let's say...
Oh, I'll tell you what. This is going to be even better. Do you know who won it last year?
No, that's...
Casey Affleck.
Oh, well, that was a controversial win.
For Manchester by the Sea.
A very controversial win because...
No, not controversial at all.
Extremely controversial due to the fact he had sexual assault allegations against Sim Stewart. But
nothing to do with the quality of his acting. Okay. Literally zero to do with the quality of his acting.
Okay, so fucking Casey Affleck won the best Oscar for whatever he won for Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
Okay, so... He won that, okay, playing, I bet, a real fucking depressed guy with a lot of acting and a lot of emoting. Yeah? Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and it was just him. I know Andy Serkis acts, but then take Andy Serkis, okay, playing Caesar in War of the Planet of the Apes. So he's up against him for that, all right? Just for the sake of argument.
Yeah.
My point is this. Yes, he's acting, but there's also a lot of post-production that comes into the technology that Casey Affleck doesn't have, man.
No. The post-production is literally like a makeup crew. That's what they're doing. It's the same as putting prosthetics on someone's face. So instead of having an actual mask glued on with, like, latex products and that sort of stuff...
Mm. Yeah.
Where they go from looking...
Like a fake nose or something, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, how they used to do prosthetics...
Mm-hmm.
Back in the old days. All movies.
Yeah.
Now they're using these digital CGI to put the mask on digitally after the fact. You can make it a little crazy,
But don't you think that that's sort of like, it does blend the performance a bit? Because there's so many people helping, is what I'm saying.
No, the opposite.
Okay, well.
It is just a mask. It's not...
But it's more than just a mask. Like, if he's playing Caesar, he's not an ape, dude. like, you know, like there's a full fucking CGI thing going on there with his body and everything.
I mean, they used mocap to do Rocket Raccoon in Guardians.
Yeah.
That was...
I understand that. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, and you don't... I know it's voiced by Bradley Cooper, yeah?
Yeah.
Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
But you don't go, oh, Jesus Christ, it's the best acting I've ever seen by Bradley Cooper as fucking Rocket Raccoon.
No, he's a voice actor, though. He was fine as a voice actor.
Yeah.
Like, compared to other voice actors.
What's the difference between Rocket Raccoon and Andy Serkis' Caesar?
I don't know. Andy Serkis is doing the voice, he's doing the acting, he's doing everything. Brad Cooper did the voiceover, whereas James Gunn's brother did the acting.
Oh, I get it.
The actor that did I see what you're saying. Craglin in the movie.
Right.
Like, he played two characters in that same movie.
I got it. So someone else did the movements and stuff.
Someone else did all
and
the
motion. And Bradley Cooper just literally did the voice.
Brad Cooper just did the voice.
Okay. I'm not 100% against you. I understand that he's acting close. I just wonder if he's blurring the line, but fair enough, it's a conversation. Do you think a day will come when he win an Oscar then? Because I'm surprised he hasn't won one already then. Like Gollum, fucking Caesar.
I feel like there's a few categories in the Oscars that are now becoming apparent that they don't have.
Yeah, but what if what would his category be? Would he have his own category, or would he just... Like, I don't care about the Oscars that much.
Well, I think it would be something along the lines of motion capture performance.
Yeah, wouldn't he win it every year? Isn't he, like, the fucking guy? He's the only guy I know who does it.
Sure Benedict Cumberbatch did Smaug in the Hobbit movies.
Okay.
The dragon. He did all of that.
He wasn't flying, though.
Like, he was mo-capped. It was his voice. It was his everything that did the dragon.
I quite like Smaug, actually, in the movies. But I feel that, dude, even way more than Caesar. There's a lot of assistance, though. There are some massive special effects on that dragon. That's what I'm trying to say. Some intense special effects of that dragon. The Benedict Cumberbatch is not responsible for. Like, there's a whole...
No, but it's his face and voice that brings life to the character. Otherwise, it's just like a generic dragon.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I hear you. I understand your arguments and stuff, and I'm interested in it. I want to kind of know more about it. Like, but if I'm on the Oscar board, dude, I'd find it, like, much so I enjoyed The Dragon, don't get me wrong, I'd find it hard to go, oh, this goes past, like, you know, what's his name in Manchester by the Sea or whoever else was up, you know, because they're giving a flesh and blood performance as opposed to, like, yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch and a team of fucking, you know, visual effects people. And CGI people and God knows what, like, contributing towards Smaug. It just feels like that's a huge team effort, as opposed to here's a male or female, you know, acting. Like Meryl Streep acting, Clint Eastwood acting, you know, Humphrey Bogart acting. You know, do you see the difference of what I'm trying to say?
No, not at all. I think you're just ranting.
I think you're choosing not to see the difference.
He is acting. I think at best you give him supporting role instead of lead role because he's never playing the lead role.
I agree with that. Well, yeah, I mean, Smaug's a supporting role. You know, but you could argue Caesar's
Andy
a lead role.
Andy Serkis has never been a lead role.
You could argue Caesar's a lead role, I would imagine. Couldn't you?
Yeah, you could give him lead role.
I'm just saying you could argue the character is a lead in War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, in that case, yeah.
So you'd have no problems. How would he accept the award, Stu? Would he accept the award as Andy Serkis, or would he come on stage CGI as Caesar? I mean, how? He won it for a whole...
Trying to pick fights. Now you're just trying to be a dick.
This is supposed to be a simple aside before I got into the regular news, Stu, but as usual, you drew us down into the weeds,
simple
my friend.
Aside. Where Dave just randomly spouts his views and uneducated views of that.
Oh, they're educated. I've listened to plenty of shows researching this stuff, man.
You've read a bunch of titles and never listened to a second of the show.
Anyway.
Lois Lane reporting style. Read the headline, write the headline down, yep. Move on with your life.
Move on very quickly. Yeah. Going to keep moving with the news cycle. Now, Stu, I'm on top of the news cycle. Disney and Fox may announce a deal this week. Of the merger, or the buyout, I guess it is.
It's come very quickly, hasn't it?
Things are moving fast.
Yeah.
This
is very good news.
Are Fox in real financial problems or something that I'm not aware of? Like, why is this deal, like, so pressing?
I think Fox is just really wanting to...
divest this.
Yeah, move into more heavily into sports and news.
Fair enough. They made a business decision, obviously. I mean, $60 and $70 billion, I heard, was being talked about. A lot of money. 60 to 70 billion.
I don't think it's going to be that big.
That was a figure I heard reported, though, that Disney were talking about. I mean, I don't know, Stu.
I would imagine it's closer to half, like $30 to $40 billion. I could see.
Do you reckon we'll get the details? I'd be surprised.
Well, look, when it's that big, yeah, we'll see it in the news.
Cool.
Like when they bought out Lucasfilm, we all saw the price tag.
We did.
When they bought out Marvel, we all saw the price tag.
That's cool.
When it's a deal that big.
I want it to happen. I don't give a fuck about monopolies. I just realised that people were arguing, like, don't you love these fucking pleb? They're nobodies on the internet. They get nothing from this deal financially, and they're whinging and whining. Oh yeah, you know, people are going to be happy because X-Men and Fantastic Four are back, but they don't realize it's going to be a monopoly. And it's like, oh fuck off! Like, you know, like seriously, just their outrage is just so misplaced. Like, guess what, kids? This corporate fucking merger is going to happen regardless of your views. Like,
I'm just so in love with the irony of you saying that internet warriors need to get a life.
Yeah, well,
whereas every second week on this podcast, we have Dave's internet wars.
Yeah, well, I have my little wars. But I consider mine more strike actions, Joe. I consider my...
I'm sure they do as well. I'm sure everybody considers their actions.
I consider my actions. But sometimes, dude, even me have to look in the mirror sometimes and realize I've got a bit too attached to my little private wars that I carry out. Because I carry out some pretty private operations.
It's a very sobering moment for you.
Yeah, it is a sobering moment. I just realized you just got to keep killing. You can't stop and think about it. But, Stu, I mean, fuck it. I hope it happens, man. And I totally agree, though. There is so much more. I am so sick of hearing about X-Men and Fantastic Four because there's so much more to this deal than that. But it will be interesting, a few things here. If this happens, Stu, one thing we do want to address is, could the Disney-Fox deal draw Hugh Jackman back to Wolverine? Because my answer is, I think yes.
Potentially. I feel like the longer this drags out, the less likely.
Oh, great.
If it happens by the end of this year, this is the best shot we've ever had.
Definitely. I mean, and I've got a quote here, Stu, from my research that you don't think I do. This is a quote from Hugh Jackman himself. Unfortunately, not on the phone to me last night, but just prior to the release of Logan.
A little disappointed.
Yeah, I know. I'm still trying to get in touch with his reps, Stu.
And by that, you mean you've done absolutely nothing other than say it on the show.
This is a quote from Hugh.
He's not denying that, by the way.
Okay,
people.
This is a quote from Hugh, so please show some respect because we're going to have him on the show. If that was on the table when I made my decision to quit, it certainly would have made me pause, that's for sure, Jackman explained. Because I always loved the idea of him within that dynamic, with the Hulk, obviously, with Iron Man. But there's a whole lot of smarter people with MBAs who can't figure that out. Laughs. Hugh laughed. You never know. So he made these comments just prior to Logan being released, which was earlier this year. That doesn't sound to me like a guy. And suddenly this deal, I'm sure, struck him as unawares as everyone else. Like,
oh yeah, unless you're really, really deep inside either of these two organizations, you wouldn't have known about this.
And I mean, Hugh's an actor. I don't think he's like in the...
No, they're not privy to these financial decisions.
But he would be aware now, and I guarantee you, I'm sure this would come with... Can you imagine the fucking...
The other thing is, I'm almost sure someone would have spoken to him already and said, if this goes through, are you interested?
Yeah.
Like, simple yes or no.
Yeah.
We'll bring out the price tag.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be like a 7-8 figure price tag. It's going to be
monstrous. It's going to be a lot.
It would be huge.
I'm fucking down for it 1,000%. It would make my life worth living, frankly. Like, seriously. Like, we talk about... If I saw Hugh Jackman wearing, like, a sort of black and gold fucking leather outfit or something... That's all it'll take. No, seriously, a bit more than that, guys. As Wolverine... Okay, in a movie with the Avengers, like next to like fucking Captain America and Spider-Man, for example, I would just be like, oh, this is as good as it fucking gets.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We're fucking back. You know, I'm feeling it big time.
I mean, let's be honest. I think I'd be feeling that whether it was Jackman or whether it was just... somebody else.
Yeah, I dig
but
it.
But there is a special place in my heart.
I want to see Jackman's Hugh Jackman do it.
It was one of the most perfect casting decisions for a superhero.
It's one of the greatest decisions. And... The guy's not 100, man. Like, he's capable. He doesn't need to...
Oh, he's still a good-looking bloke.
Yeah. I mean, it could happen.
Like,
but I agree with you. They need this to happen and happen fast. And then they need to be able to sort of work out what they're doing. Because I've got another quote here from Deadline. Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige is said to be eager to get his hands on the X-Men universe.
Obviously.
News which wouldn't come as any sort of surprise. Whether he will scrap the likes of Gambit, X-Force, and Multiple Man or just reconfigure them for the MCU isn't clear, though. I mean, I highly doubt he's going to cancel, like, X-Force, but Multiple Man and Gambit, interesting to know what direction Feige would move.
Yeah, I think Gambit's on the fence.
Sure.
I think there is some positive news with Gambit.
Yeah. Well, it's got Channing Tatum attached to the biggest thing. You know?
So that's a potential. Multiple Man, I would get rid of in a heartbeat.
No one would care.
I think nobody cares about it.
Yeah.
You've got James Franco, bigger issues
with the whole X-Men universe more than anything.
Bring James Franco in and do a massive movie.
Yeah.
Like, leave him as Multiple Man, that's fine. But.
And let's not forget, Stu, even we've got Dark Phoenix coming out next year. That's coming out irregardless of these conversations.
Very true.
How Feige, like, say this all falls under Feige's purview in the first place. Like, let's say the deal happens. Let's say he's then given the keys to the kingdom. It's going to be interesting to know how they're going to sort it all out, because all these people at Fox have done their own thing.
At this point,
long.
I imagine all he could do with that movie would throw in a post-credit scene.
Mm.
And link it to the others. Same as like the very
first
one.
Would he do separate dimensions, maybe? Could he do separate dimensions? That might be an idea.
He could. If he was going to do that,
mm.
he would run it and he would have someone like Doctor Strange show up walking through a portal at the end of a post-credits thing.
I think that might be actually not
like
a bad
Doctor Strange
idea.
Is the easiest way to link any Marvel movie, any property together.
But if you told me, like, oh, the X-Men are in one dimension and the Marvel Universe is in another, I'm kind of like, okay.
See, for me, if you could have Doctor Strange walk through with someone like a beast.
Yeah.
And Beast walks up and just says, we need you to come with us. And like they walk back through the portal at the very end of the like post-credits
Jesus Christ,
scene.
Is someone writing this down?
Perfect. You'd run with that, give zero details of any future movies.
Stuart's just nailed it. Kevin Feige.
You don't need anything else.
Signal of Doom, Kevin Feige.
Do whatever
Feige.
You want with that next movie.
Fucking, it pays a lot of money, actually.
Oh, I'm expecting a seven-figure salary for my contributions. But
you can pay me 10% less, but it's okay. I'll take it. Because Stu, I think, came up with a lot of it over there.
Honestly, I'd just be happy with a sandwich. Like, I don't even need the cash. Just a sandwich. That'll do.
Well, unlike Stu, I do want the cash. cash is very important to me. Could you imagine what a pest I would be if I was on the set? Like, Hugh, just one minute. I got some notes.
You would be intolerable on the set of a movie like that.
David Finn banned after half an hour. I wouldn't last long.
No.
Now, Stu, I had a bit of more extra time this week for a bit of research, something I don't normally indulge in, but I actually... have you come across the mystery of Banner's grey hands?
I have. I've seen the set photo.
Was it set? I at first stupidly thought it was in a picture and was studying this picture of the movie for about a minute on the train. You're like, where the fuck? A, where is, what's his name? Mark Ruffalo. And B, where is this hand? But then I realised on closer inspection, it was actually a set photo. And just to give the listeners, you know, a taste of what it is, it's Ruffalo sort of doing a reaction to someone with, like, I don't know what you call it, Stu, obviously setting up like a special effect thing, and they've got like a grey hand in place of
similar size to what the Hulk's actual hand size is.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. A lot of people were speculating at first Thanos, but I hope, Stu, that it's the grey Hulk and somehow he's different from Mark Ruffalo. He's split away from Bruce Banner. Well, what are your thoughts?
I mean, that's a popular fan theory at the moment.
Thank you.
In the shot, we see an Iron Man.
I came up with that myself.
Maybe.
Did someone else have the same fucking idea?
Only a couple of thousand people, yeah.
Okay.
And like a week before you, but yeah. Okay. Dave came up with it all on his own.
I did. Anyway, but so what are you saying? That's one popular theory.
In the photo, we've got Wong standing off to the side and Iron Man's in there as well.
Yeah.
Clearly pre all their special effects, because Iron Man's got a bunch of motion capture on.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is not acting, according to Dave. So Iron Man, not acting. RDJ doesn't act.
Fuck off.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, you know, RDJ should have about 5 Oscars. I believe he's got 1. But, anyway, okay. I'm not even getting involved in that discussion, Stu. He's not playing a fucking ape. That's the first thing I'll say. Okay.
No, at this point, it looks like he's playing a guy in his pajamas with a helmet on.
That's acting, Stu, in 2000.
Oh, that's acting now, okay. Dave's changing his tune quickly when RDJ gets involved.
I'm not throwing RDJ under the bus on this one. What's your speculation,
look,
Stu?
We see this giant grey hand. The speculation is that Thanos has somehow pulled an evil twin version of the Hulk outside using like a reality gem or something like that.
Okay.
So we get a Grey Hulk versus Green Hulk.
That's pretty cool.
I think that's
pretty cool.
Unlikely.
Huh.
I think it's pushing it a little too far for Marvel at the moment.
I'm really living and dying by your theory, so I really like that idea.
I also think in Infinity War we've got so many characters that adding another one
does seem odd.
Does seem a little odd.
Unless Hulk's really causing Thanos some serious problems.
Yeah.
But what about this one? This is so, what I thought I heard that it was Hulk had split off from him. So well, Hulk had splintered away from Banner. So Banner was just Banner, and this has happened in the comics, and Hulk just becomes the Hulk. They're two separate people.
Could be.
That was the other theory I read. I prefer your theory you came up with. I think that sounds fucking awesome. But.
I mean, yeah. I feel like there are two far more likely scenarios.
Tell us, Stu.
The first is, this is a bunch of guys playing around with a giant hand, and they just happen to take this photo, and they spread it out.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Trying to get people to talk about it.
It's a set photo, Stu. I disregard that. That's bullshit.
So I think that's the most likely option.
Well, I think that's the least.
That they've got one of the Hulk's synthetic hands and they're just playing around with it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Just hijinks.
Because they do use a hand like that.
Hijinks on the set, basically.
Basically, yeah. They do use a hand like that to show where the Hulk is grabbing someone so actors can react.
Okay.
And see something in front of them instead of like a tennis ball and a stick like they used to.
Yeah.
The other option is, this is them fighting Black Dwarf, which is one of the Black Order guys, works with Thanos.
So basically like a henchman of Thanos kind
and,
of thing.
And he's
another monster, basically.
Well, he's one of the five Black Order, and he's mm-hmm. kind of the most equivalent to the Hulk.
I think big guy, that's super strong. I think that's very likely, that it's just another entity.
It's, you know. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. The other thing is the fact that Iron Man's there.
Mm.
Kind of supports that, because we know that the Hulk Buster is going to be used at some stage to fight Black Dwarf. So,
from the looks of that trailer, he should be in the Hulk Buster of fucking armor all fucking movie.
Actually, speaking of that little clip of the Hulk Buster, there is a rumor going around that the way he lands when he's wearing that armor,
boom,
it is not like Iron Man.
Oh.
There's speculation that Iron Man put Banner in the Hulk Buster armor. Oh. So Banner could fly across and enter a battle somewhere.
Oh.
And that's how they transported Banner across.
What, and then Banner turns into the Hulk and breaks out of the armor?
No, I think he climbs out of the armor, but he's still Banner.
Right. Why would he put Banner in the armor?
To send him into battle somewhere. The Hulk Buster.
Why would you just send the Hulk in?
Because the Hulk, kind of mindless, not able to take commands easily.
But what, Banner's better than Tony Stark? I don't
know. No, well, Tony's got another suit. Tony can just fly there.
Oh, so Tony
goes in. How is Banner going to get from wherever he is into the battle?
It's kind of like he's got two cars. Like, so, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, I hear.
It's kind of like
he's complicated. Who came up with that theory? That's very. That reeks.
The way he lands, it's kind of awkward. It's not like.
I looked at it, man.
Iron Man is.
I looked at it. I wasn't like fucking studying it like it was a murder. Like, I mean, that reeks to me of guys in their room fucking spending too long looking at this trailer. They're overthinking it, Stu, is what it's called.
And,
man.
And that is basically where I'm at with this set photo, saying that this is a Grey Hulk. I feel like this is just. Overthought this one.
I reacted. I didn't think about it at all. I just reacted straight away. I came up with my theories in about 0.1 second. I didn't think about it at all. I was so excited. I told you about it, remember? And then I was so excited that I also found it, because how it was described to me was, this is how someone described it to me, Stu.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's this really cool photo with Mark Ruffalo for Avengers Infinity War with a grey hand in the photo. You've got to look really hard to find it. So I was like, okay, it's in a...
You've got to look really hard, like in the middle of the photo.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at a poster trying to work out what they were even talking about. And then, yeah, it's a set photo. It wasn't hard at all to see it. It was the main feature of the photo. It will be interesting to see what it actually is. I'm so confused now. I have so many options on the table. I think it's just going to be another henchman. Like, or Thanos himself. Could be
well,
Thanos.
I mean, look, in Infinity War, Thanos isn't the big villain that they're fighting.
Isn't he?
They're going to be fighting more of the five Black Order.
Right.
He's there. He's still doing his thing.
Yeah.
But it's been described as a heist movie.
Yeah.
Where each of those five...
Where he's stealing the stuff.
Well, each of those five that he controls are stealing the things and then bringing them back to him.
Okay.
So he's organizing the thing. He's the puppet master.
And the Avengers...
And we do see him quite a bit. He does fight a few people.
Yeah.
But the bulk of it's going to be them fighting the Black Order and, like, Proxima Midnight.
It's going to be fucking
Corvus
exciting.
Corvus Glaive
and
those
this is all your thing. You know all these guys, don't you?
Well, we all know it now because we read Infinity on the show a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, that's where I know them from. And I know them from a bit of they turn up in... I guess it is the Avengers run of Hickman, isn't it? That
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One thing I always find confusing is sometimes, even in Hickman's run, where Thanos is just captured and is just happy to sit in a cell. And I'm like, okay, really?
Yeah, they kind of... They can't... Agree on a power level with Thanos.
Yeah, like sometimes he's just, oh, I'm just happy to be a prisoner. Other times, oh my god, it's Thanos, like, fuck.
But I mean, I feel like they've done that a lot. Like, Scarlet Witch, at some points, insanely powerful, other times, regular mutant.
Or just a minor member of the team, sort of thing. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of characters out there that they can't really agree on the.
Yeah, it used to be very simple, Stu, when I collected Transformers and stuff. They would rate it on the back. Dude, you get the purple, you have this sort of purple thing, you put it on the back of the Transformer thing and give you all their power levels, their intelligence level, etc. Yep. It was a very easy way to settle disputes in the playground.
That's I feel like they want to intentionally start disputes in the playground now.
But they, yeah, because they used to, dude, have handbooks and stuff, both DC and Marvel, that had the power levels of characters and all that kind of stuff. I prefer that, frankly. I like it. Like, I'm not saying I need to be sitting there like, to the nth degree, but I like to have some. I don't like it when characters are just either infinitely powerful or they just vary so much. Like I think Thanos is really. When Thanos is just sitting there in a prison and just, oh yeah, I'm just doing my time for Patsy Cline. And it's like, this sucks, man. This is Thanos. Like, dude, like, come on. Like, fucking grow some balls and get out there. Like, I don't know. I just don't dig it, man. You know, like, but that's part of comics. The different writers have their interpretations.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Of course it's right, Stu, I said it. Now, I'm kidding, of course. Now, Stu, the Batman Ninja trailer.
This your reaction. Looks fucking amazing, doesn't it?
I saw your visual reaction when you came over here to record. I said, you didn't know what it was. You thought it was some stupid news item I'd come up with.
I thought it was some weird Dave Finn back alley.
Yeah, vigilante story. I know. That's what you were thinking. But no, in fact, the creator, I believe, of Afro Samurai, a popular anime from the early 2000s, is, I think, has either written it or directed it or something. And it looks, the animation is fantastic. It's kind of like a Japanese, sort of anime-style Batman.
It's called Batman Ninja.
Mm.
It's an anime. It's kind of a take on what Batman's life would be if it was set in Japan.
Yeah.
So it's an alternate reality thing. It's not based on any continuity.
A sort of pretty, like, jazzed out kind of anime stuff.
Oh, yeah. But we see, like, a Japanese armored Batman. Which looks pretty
cool. How about Joker, man?
Joker looks and sounds amazing.
Mm. So Catwoman in there.
We see Catwoman. We see Two-Face.
Robin.
Gorilla Grodd is in there.
Yeah, Gorilla Grodd made a... I was like, not made really a weird Batman appearance.
And I'm like, not a Batman villain, but okay. We're going with the whole DC universe.
Yeah.
This is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this... It honestly looks incredible.
I hope it's as good as what that trailer made it seem.
Yeah, so do I.
Because it looked as a badass trailer. Like, to be honest, man, like, in terms of the animated stuff for Batman, like, we've all sat here and had our nitpicks over Batfleck and stuff. But, like, Lego Batman was awesome. And how awesome does this
look?
Generally
speaking, the animated Batman stuff has all been pretty good.
Yeah. I've got that Batman.
There are a few exceptions. I think the Killing Joke wasn't great.
No, there are some duds. I started watching Batman and Harley. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's on the lesser scale, but it's not unwatchable at all. Harley has sex with Nightwing in it, actually.
Okay, that's weird.
I was like, yeah, that came out of nowhere. That came out of the blue. Because usually he's like between Babs and Starfire, you know, the Teen Titan. But yeah, he just, they have sex. Yeah. She ties him to a bed and they have quite the fun time. And she's...
Now I know why you're watching this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love Harley Quinn. But the animation isn't fantastic. It looks a little bit cheap, actually.
See, in Batman Ninja, the animation looks incredible. Beautiful.
I would recommend it. I think it's one to watch too when it comes out. I'm sure it'll get a fair bit of press.
Oh, for sure.
Now, we've got some major... There have been shakeups at Warner's relating to the underperformance of Justice League, Stu. Heads are rolling.
Yeah, big heads as well.
Yeah,
it's pretty high up the list.
So, John Berg, who was heading up the whole DC film section, has moved away to a production deal with the guy who runs the Lego side of things. Jeff Johns is potentially off as a producer. It's got here, John Berg will reportedly leave his role as head of DC Films and co-production partner with Roy Lee. Jeff Johns won't be promoted into the role, according to the report. He'll stay in his role as DC Entertainment Chief Creative Officer. Additionally, Stu, this is interesting, DC Films could become fully integrated with Warner Brothers Studio, including losing their own separate building. And I read further into this. Now, a lot of this is speculation, and I feel bad in reporting it. Apparently, Jeff Johns may lose his producer credit and move to an advisory capacity. I just want to comment on this, Stu. This is the suits have been a big part of the problem for the DC films themselves. Like, I don't believe this is all Geoff Johns' fucking mistake, this entire DC thing. I think he's never had the kind of creative control that Kevin Feige had. He didn't have the control over Snyder that he needed. Yes, he should share his part of the blame for what is a very flawed rollout. But when the CEO of Warner's was dictating that a movie has to be 2 hours and you're cutting out Joss Whedon scenes as well as Zack Snyder scenes just to make the 2 hours, you wonder if the suits themselves should be taking part of the blame.
Yeah. So this whole story started when John Berg left. They dressed it up as a move sideways and a kind of a semi-promotion.
Yeah.
But basically they fired him from DC Films.
Yeah. Tied to the underperformance of
Absolutely.
Justly,
it was absolutely,
which is massively underperformed. Probably underperformed by like 500 million from what they were hoping.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it was an absolute
substantially
flop for them.
Yeah.
Now, Geoff Johns, who was in line to be the next successor, who was meant to move up, is no longer taking that role. So they've reported that Geoff Johns is still connected to it.
Yeah.
But he's no longer going to be the guy in charge.
Hmm.
Which basically means that Warner's is not having a guy like Kevin Feige is for Marvel.
Yeah.
One guy who oversees all the projects.
And you know my problem? I don't feel they're giving him a fair run here. It's kind of set him up to fail.
Look, he's had 5 movies.
But he wasn't in control of it all, Stu.
He's done nothing. He could have exercised more control.
Yeah, yes, you're right. He could
and
have.
I think that's what they're punishing him for.
Maybe he's
not.
It's not
that he made the wrong decisions, it's that he didn't make decisions.
Yeah.
He needed to step in at times and say, we need to not listen to these guys, or we need to do it this way.
Well, Snyder had way too much power, obviously.
And I think they wanted someone like Geoff Johns to be able to stand up to Snyder.
Mm. Yeah, true.
And
maybe it's a personality clash.
And nobody did.
Maybe it's a personality thing.
It could be. It could be internal politics. Yeah. It could be personalities.
You know what I mean? Personality, some people aren't born to lead. You know what I mean?
That's very true, yeah.
And I'm just saying maybe his personality type isn't suited to the real cutthroat end of the movie business, where you've got fire someone and...
Look, originally they were both listed as producers.
Mm.
And at their capacity, they should have had more influence on the film.
Mm.
They are losing their producer credits in all upcoming films.
Hmm.
So their producing credits have been dropped from Wonder Woman 2 and Aquaman.
You know what worries me, though, Stu? What are they going to do then? Okay, that's great. You're moving Geoff Johns away, I'm like, all right, that's a shame for Geoff Johns. But, like, so what's the strategy? Like, what is the strategy then, Warners?
At the moment, they are looking to get someone else.
I'm available, Stu. I want to nominate that now.
If they can't find someone else quickly, it is going to fold, become part of the main Warner Brothers studios.
And that worries me because I think we're going to start getting more schlocky one-shots. We're not going to have a connected universe.
Exactly, which means you're less likely to get a connected universe. You're less likely to get any kind of through threads running.
I think that sucks, man. I think that sucks, I'll be honest. Unless they realize and wake up and go, you know what, cold splash of water. What do we know how to do? Batman movies. Okay, let's rebuild our Batman universe again. Let's get Matt Reeves in. Get rid of Batfleck. He's gone. Okay.
Well, Matt Reeves has already said Batfleck is in Flashpoint.
Yes, I know that. But he's not going to be in the Matt Reeves
universe. He's not connected to anything beyond that.
But maybe they're going to go, well, okay, we've really royally screwed up our Justice League stuff. It's been very mixed. We've had one hit, Wonder Woman, that was a critical and, you know, real financial, like, positive windfall. So we've obviously got the Wonder Woman movies going.
To be honest, that is the problem.
Mm.
That's not helpful for them. If everything flopped, they could scrap it, start again somewhere else.
Mm.
They'd wait a year or two and then just release a whole new movie.
Yeah.
Whole new cast to start again.
Sure. But one thing really worked.
But because Wonder Woman really worked, and they don't want to let that go, they need to figure out a way to keep Gal Gadot on, but change everything else.
But can I just say this? Like, I really wonder if the real high up suits, like, and they are the real corporate guys who only care about the numbers, okay? Do they give a fuck at all about the story? Not really.
No.
So, but, and that's fine because that's their job. But what my problem is, okay, are they clever? I hope it's explained to them. Like, we can rebuild this universe outside of this one movie we're doing called Flashpoint with Gal Gadot Wonder Woman still as our central and come out of that and rebuild it. It's quite possible to do it, but they just need, it needs to be kind of like get through their brains, like, we can do this and make these hit movies, and we can make Gal Gadot, like in Marvel, Iron Man. Look, make Gal Gadot Wonder Woman.
Their problem is this is going to cost money and time and people, and it is far more cost effective for them to go back to the old version of one shots, small trilogies with a single director.
Yeah. And just sort of give up on the bigger game.
Give up on the big game.
Yeah.
That is more cost-effective for them. And the higher-ups, they don't care about the stories. They care about cost-effectiveness.
That's true. And they
want a return on their investment.
I understand that, like, the movie business is a massive marriage between art and commerce is the overriding factor. Like,
yeah.
I get that. Like, but the shame for me is, like, I just wonder. I'd love to I believe that there is a full documentary, Stu, that we would love to see on what happened in Justice League. Like, when the CEO was the one who nominated it to be 2 hours and it flops, you wonder if he feels any heat for that.
I'm sure he does.
He must.
I'm sure everybody right now, like, that was directly involved in that project.
I don't feel comfortable saying that because he's a very powerful guy. And, like, you know, but he's the one who said, make it 2 hours. And they're cutting out scenes that Whedon himself was shooting. So it's like, what a waste.
I mean, look, let's be honest. What Whedon was shooting was so in tone with Snyder.
Yeah.
That it was barely his stuff.
No, I know, but what I'm
saying... And it's actually been incredibly hard, as what we've seen come out of all this, is it's incredibly hard to tell what scenes were done by which director.
Oh, yeah, no, it's...
Which is a credit to Whedon.
Yeah, yeah.
That he could change...
Oh, Whedon's a talented guy. I mean,
but they cut this film, regardless of who's shooting what.
Yeah.
They cut it down to 2 hours based on a decision that someone
made. That was a mistake. Can I be honest? That was a real mistake.
And I think everyone directly involved in this project right now is everyone should be nervous.
Heat. It's kind of like at work when something really badly fucks up. You know, beyond just this is a minor thing, there's actually a major incident, and heads do roll. And pressure, and there are scapegoats, Stu.
And I feel like John Berg and Geoff Johns are the scapegoats.
Yeah.
Geoff Johns is one of the biggest names attached to that universe.
Yeah. But do you really think, like, it's well known.
Snyder would have been rolling if he hadn't already left.
So Snyder's already gone, yeah. So
if he hadn't already left, he'd be the head controller.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, he definitely had a vision and was trying to execute that vision, and it wasn't, like, that popular. Like,
and, I mean, look, good on him for having a vision and going for it. Yeah. He had balls to take his idea to that extreme. It just didn't work.
Not everything. Now, Stu, I've actually got... I did a bit of research. Lois, actually, this week has been quite the investigative journalist. And in combination, I want to pay some credit to Jimmy from Bruce Wayne's World, who we've now got a spin-off show, Stu.
I've heard.
We're getting more and more popular. Just in terms of the whole signal I'm talking about. The whole brand, Stu. We're a brand now. Do you like it?
We're an empire.
Can I stamp you or something brand into your flesh with a signal? Is that possible?
I feel like we're a little bit off branding you.
I would enjoy branding you, though. That would
maybe
be...
after a few tequila shots. Yeah. Maybe we'll get there.
Maybe when you start receiving some cash.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe when I get that sandwich. I don't know.
When you get that sandwich. Sandwiches, a free sandwich, Stu. You do have to get branded. Now, I've got this thing, Stu, and I'm pretty proud of myself. I found it on Reddit after being directed by Jimmy. It's got all the scenes that were longer. The differences between the cut that execs saw and some people saw that Snyder showed, okay, before the reshoots. So do you want me to run through them? Because they're pretty cool.
Go for it.
All right. Okay, I'm pretty proud of myself here.
Let's pick the highlights.
Okay, so it some of them are longer scenes and some of them are deleted. So I'll start out longer. This is all this guy's claims. Apparently, they say on Reddit it's verified, so take that for what it's worth. I don't know.
Reddit article.
I haven't actually myself personally seen the seen the Snyder cut. Like, I'm stunned to hear that's you.
I'm a little bit stunned.
Okay,
Lois wasn't invited.
The longer it began with Bruce recruiting Aquaman. It was basically the same scene as I saw in the theatrical version this weekend. However, some lines were added by Whedon and some Zach bits. God, he has to make it sound like Zach, like personal friend Snyder. Snyder bits were cut. Aquaman was originally more resilient and shut off to Bruce here. Okay. Deleted scene. That's not much of a difference. That scene was pretty poor. Deleted. Barry Allen visits the library because he knows that Iris West is there. If you recall, she had Iris West but then didn't show her in the movie.
Yeah, see, that's one of the cuts that I'm totally cool with. I didn't need to see Iris West in this movie.
Okay, anyway. He tries to talk to her, but fumbles and blushes. He mentions that he might go and see his dad today. Iris likes his awkwardness, but doesn't think he's all that special. We see Barry breaking the window with his finger to kind of impress Iris. Our first look at his powers. When everyone and Iris are surprised at his window breaking, Barry just says, "Weak glass," and walks out. What a dick move by Barry Allen. Like, just to
goes
show
to a library, smashes a window, walks out.
But, like, in front of everyone. Like, oh, here's, check it out, I'm the Flash.
And, I mean, that was in the trailer as well.
Was it?
Yeah, Barry Allen pulling his finger through the glass and smashing. In the trailer, not okay. In the movie.
Okay, well, there we go. So that scene was, according to this guy, deleted. Longer history lesson. We were talking about the past and stuff, I guess, where Bruce and Diana were talking. What I was most surprised by was that WB cut out dialogue by the Green Lantern, Zeus, and even Ares. Brackets, yes, he was there too. They had a couple of lines each, as did Robin Wright and Hippolyta. They just kept the action and clicked out all the dialogue, I guess. What? The Green Lantern that flew across the fucking thing.
Well, yeah, and we saw Zeus, but only for a brief second.
But when the Green Lantern was just, you could tell just a little effect that was added in, just flying over. What did he stop and go, hey! Hey, guys! Or something. I don't know. But, like, so they cut that scene out, or they cut the dialogue out of that. I've got my questions for this fucking Reddit guy. Like, he's got a lot, like, it's very detailed stuff. Like, has he got a photographic memory? No. Okay. Deleted. After taking the mother box from Themyscira, this is actually, I heard Kevin Smith report. After taking the mother box from Themyscira, Steppenwolf actually talks to the box. His mother, Hegra's essence, is alive in the mother boxes, and bringing them all together would unleash her powers, finally giving Steppenwolf an edge over his younger brother, Darkseid. That is what his plan was originally. I thought for sure they would keep this scene in because they used dialogue from the scene in the trailers. No protectors here. No lanterns. This world will fall. You'll be free, mother. So, that I believe. And apparently when Kevin Smith was doing his podcast, which I did listen to, but he didn't go into this level of detail, but there were guys in the audience, dude, going, yes, I was there. I can confirm that, like, this shit about, like, his mother and stuff was there. Like, they were in, like, all these people are in the fucking audience that were supposedly for WB execs. How do we get in this fucking thing? Like, and I'd love to be in there, and then people are questioning me on the differences. I'd be like, okay.
Well, I may have fallen asleep for some of it.
Okay, it was 3 months ago, firstly. I wouldn't be like, oh, and there's like one line that's different. Like, oh, yeah, it's just so different. Like, how they did it. Oh, my God. Like, okay, so, but I believe that scene is confirmed that apparently there was a whole more of a storyline about the mother boxes containing as well. Like, it was all cut out, if you recall. None of that's in there. Like, Steppenwolf doesn't really have any motivation.
No.
And then he's just a bad guy.
Well, the motivation became that he was beaten before, so he's come back to, like, get revenge.
Yeah, revenge, yeah.
Which okay, is barely a plot.
Yeah, whereas that had more stuff about his mother being in there and he's trying to free her and stuff.
It also ties in to Darkseid a lot better.
Also ties into that mother box. Mother. Just saying. Well, it does. I mean, do you disagree? What about Granny Goddess? Have you ever heard of her?
I have not.
She's a crazy dark side. She's like the evil, really old witch kind of thing who runs the Furies for Darkseid, the sort of female warriors.
Okay.
Big Bard is one of them, but she becomes good.
Yep.
But yeah, no, she's a crazy. I thought she might have got a run. She's a real crazy character, very evil. Okay, deleted. Apparently a lot of stuff was cut out from about Cyborg. Cyborg's previous life. He plays a great football match that his mother attends. Afterwards, they drive home. Victor is angry that his dad never made it while his mother tries to console him. Victor just keeps getting angry and lashing out, loses control of the car, causing a fiery crash, which is obviously what then destroys his body. And then his dad does all that shit to him. So they cut all of that out. Longer.
Totally cool with that.
Yeah, that sounds like such a shit scene. Longer, the Gordon scene had a little setup that I didn't see in the theatrical version. Gordon dismisses a junkie and tells him to get better at life before another cop comes up to him with drawings of the parademons. His conversation with the League also ran longer. First he asks Wonder Woman if she's the same woman he keeps seeing reports on in London. Then he asks Cyborg, how does he eat? Does he even need to? So it's just a bit of a character moment for Gordon bantering with the League, really. I would have preferred to have seen it, but I can see that being cut. If you're trying to make 2 hours, that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a little bit of character, you know what I mean? Between them. Deleted. After the attack on Atlantis, Aquaman consults with Mera and Volko over what he should do next. Mera wants him to stay as king because she doesn't trust Orm. Volko wants him to do what his heart says. Aquaman confesses he feels responsibility to help the people on Earth. Delete. Agree?
So far, they're making all the right.
Yeah, I'm like, delete. I mean, sorry, if I'm trying to make 2 hours, delete. Because you had enough Aquaman. It was a taste for Aquaman, the movie coming out next year.
Yeah, you know? That's the point of this. Like, yeah.
Anyway, so deleted. The League visits the Batcave. Alfred has humorous reactions to the League. Bruce Wayne talks about a nightmare he had, referencing Stu, the nightmare from Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah.
I've lost my place. What did I say? Oh, yeah. No, but he believes that Steppenwolf will try and resurrect the power of Superman and that he must do it first unless they want to fight an evil Kryptonian too. So it's kind of a race against time because Steppenwolf wants to resurrect Thingo. Superman. Superman's changed, Stu. Not deleted or longer. Changed. Superman's resurrection was only because Superman detects foreign genetic material in his DNA, a.k.a. the Codex. This is the final confirmation needed that Superman can be brought back to life after all. Then the revival happens pretty much the same. So I don't quite understand what that is. But like they use the Codex to do it instead of like how they did it, which was just kind of dragging his body into the swamp of the on the Kryptonian ship, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the Codex was from Man of Steel.
Yeah. Okay. Deleted. And I also heard this scene discussed at some length. Deathstroke breaks Lex out of prison. They part ways because the cops are hot on their trail, deciding to meet up later at a location they discussed. So there's a whole scene where he breaks into Arkham.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that wasn't in the movie.
Well, apparently there was rumours, Stu, that Jared Leto did come in to do some shooting and that you saw Batman's rogues gallery in Arkham and stuff.
See, that would have been cool in the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
Like when they're kind of zooming in on the Luther imposter.
Yeah.
And the bald guy in the cell.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been cool to like see the cells on the
Luther
side.
And Two-Face there kind of thing, like, you know, like standing
just,
up against
just them. Maybe one or two people, yeah. Kind of obvious villains.
I'd feel that.
That would have been really cool, but...
That would have been cool for the Batman fans out there.
Yeah, I imagine it's pretty expensive to get Jared Leto for 3 seconds.
Well, apparently they did get him, though. Apparently he came in and shot, so he would have been paid. Well,
that's cool.
So, look, that was highly rumoured that he did come in and do some shooting for this, like just a day shooting. God, this one's really long. Deleted. Kent Farm. Already.
Yep. Bored. Move on. Bored,
yeah, we're not even... It's
Kent Farm. No.
It's fucking boring. Like, it's just a big speech from Martha Parr Kent. Like, delete. Deleted. Yeah, Clark heads up to meet Alfred and get his suit, which potentially could be the scene that was in the trailer where he's like, oh, you're finally here, or whatever he said. Like...
You know, yeah, he said you'd come.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, but Stu, if I'm writing this Reddit article, pretty easy one to just make up, you know. Like, I mean, I saw the trailer too, mate. Jesus. Anyway, deleted. Steppenwolf's second conversation with Hegra. Now that he has all three mother boxes, her return to the world can begin. Change. Bruce's conversation with Diana after Superman returns. Diana comes in to pop Bruce's shoulder and tend to his injuries. Bruce reveals that he's willing to die to save the world. In fact, he says he deserves to die because of what he's done. He's killed people and nothing. Not even his hate for Superman can justify killing like that. Diana tells him he's changed now.
His hate for Superman?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, well, he's saying in Batman vs. Superman, he hated Superman because he thought Superman was just an evil alien. Anyway, whatever. And then Diana tells him he's changed now, but Bruce remains adamant that he can only atone himself by sacrificing his life. So I prefer the scene we got, which I thought was a really cool scene, where she just pops his shoulder and she's like, you can't do this forever. And he's like, I struggle to do it now. And we're all like, we know Batfleck. You struggle for motivation on a daily basis, it seems. I don't know. It just seems that if Batman's like, I need to kill myself, you know, die trying. It's like, yeah, okay, thanks, Batman. Like, we're trying to save the world here, big guy.
It sounds like all these cuts, they didn't need to tell him make it 2 hours. They just said make it a decent, watchable movie.
Yeah.
These cuts are...
Alternate ending we were showing. Cyborg tries to separate the mother boxes while Hegra keeps trying to talk him away. Furious, Steppenwolf grabs him and rips him apart, essentially killing him. I like that. But apparently that, Stu, that is highly... That was one of the rumours that I believe is true. Like, apparently plenty of people have said that in the original cut, Cyborg did get killed. And then it's kind of like, can Cyborg ever really die? You know, because he's like fucking internet or whatever. Like, changed. Superman joins the fight and teams up with the League to defeat Steppenwolf. However, at one point, Steppy, he starts calling him Steppy, tries to tempt Superman into joining his army. And we see Darkseid for the first time in Superman's vision, and we see flashes of the nightmare footage. However, Superman snaps back from it and delivers the final blow to Steppy. Let's call him Steppenwolf. Defeating him. I like that idea. Like, you know, that Superman's getting kind of like images of the nightmare future where he's just like going around killing everyone that was in Batman vs. Superman. Because that ties into what Batman's vision was. You know, they don't pay off that vision at all. It's like, oh, let's never talk about that dream I had. It was just a dream. Yeah. Deleted. Steppenwolf is killed by Darkseid in Apocalypse. Darkseid intends to come to Earth to meet the Kryptonian. So Darkseid kills him with, like, say, let's say, the Omega beams from his eyes, because Darkseid can basically kill anyone.
Yeah.
And then it very much ends with, like, now I'll go and do it myself. Very much a Thanos kind of Darkseid, like, setting up what would have been Justice League 2, because if you recall, originally there were going to be 1 and 2 together, back-to-back movies. That was the original pitch that Snyder had.
Yeah.
And it got changed when Batman Superman underperformed and the suits were like, actually, let's just do 1 and see how it goes. So pretty much, though, I like the idea that it ended with Darkseid going, okay, you know, my turn kind of thing, you know?
Look, yes, it just feels way too similar to Thanos. Like, but way too
similar.
Can I
say this? Darkseid is actually created before Thanos, man, by like 20 years.
Oh, I'm not saying the characters feel the same. I'm just saying
the vibe.
If he shows up in a post-credit scene and says, now it's my turn, or... Yeah. I'm going to have to do it myself. You just like...
Yeah.
Like, you literally just copied Marvel word just for word. Just copy move and paste. On.
Yeah.
Just give up.
So, I'm really going to do it myself.
Yeah.
I don't have a black order.
Just give up.
I don't have an Infinity Gauntlet. Something like that. Then it's like, deleted. Aquaman meets Mera of the Village Coast. Delete. And agrees to come back. Barry steps into the library. Iris smiles at him cutely. Do you get the feeling that this guy just loves Barry Allen? Like every fucking moment? Like, deleted. Bruce and Barry place Victor's body in the Batcave. Bruce comments that his organic tissue may be dead. Is dead, but it may be possible to reignite his mechanical parts. Barry promises to help however he can. Deleted. Lois introduces Perry White to Clark Kent, a.k.a. Superman. That's all I can remember right now. I definitely like what I saw earlier better. I'm just going off a month-old memory now. Well, Jesus Christ, if I could remember that much stuff after a month, I'd be very impressed with myself. Share your comments, because that was quite the investigative deep dive that I just took. Are you impressed?
Not even a little bit. This was rumour, speculation, and all of it was just making this a better film.
What?
Like, there may be one or two scenes there where I was like, yeah, I'd like to see that scene.
Well, I heard John Snap on Collider talking about this, and it sounded like way better than when I go through the article. Because I haven't actually sat down and read through the whole list until just then. And it's a long list, man. Fuck. But none of that I was like, oh, this is the best thing ever. Like, it's a lot of it's like Cyborg crashes into a tree, like, whilst complaining. Like, no thanks. Like, Cyborg is just more of an idiot than
it
I already...
It just feels like this movie was born to be a train wreck, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, none of that, like, what... So the only like bit
even
I
even the shit they cut out wasn't good.
Yeah, none of that. Like, everyone's been going, oh, but it really builds up Barry's story. Not that, like, what, one scene? Like, he breaks a window. I wouldn't call that, like... None of that's just blowing me away. Like, the biggest change was the scene where Batman's got a death wish. I prefer the scene we got.
Yeah, I'm...
Yeah, I don't know, man.
This movie was never going to be good. This movie was a train wreck from day one.
Well, anyway, so at least... I would like to see this documentary, though, dude, and I've got a word for it. Crisis. You like it?
No.
Oh. Okay. League Crisis?
Oh, no.
Crisis
stop. Please stop.
In the Justice League. Crisis in the Justice... Infinite Crisis. It's got to really set a common theme for Crisis. Pointing to the movie in trouble.
Yeah.
Crisis on set! Anyway,
hard pass.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, so but like Kevin Smith was very excited. He saw the earlier
cut. Kevin Smith's always very excited.
He saw the earlier cut of the movie. I heard him, dude. He was pretty dialed down on this movie. He was very much like it was a good movie, not a great movie. Like
that tells you that it wasn't.
Yeah,
a good movie.
He sounded very chastened. Actually, it was very
when
chastened.
Even Kevin Smith isn't like.
You get a feeling Batfleck hasn't returned any of his calls either, because even his normal like, oh yeah, I haven't spoken to Ben like a few years, but you know I still love him. And it was like even that was a bit more dialed down. Oh, you know what I mean?
So sad.
It is sad, dude. Like, I mean, don't worry, he's shedding tears. No need for us to shed any tears for him. I'm sure he shed plenty himself. So, blah, blah, blah. Kevin Smith, yeah, the earlier cut he was showing included a teaser Superman turning evil with Vision of the Dark Side. So, pretty much, we just did the whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's it, really. So, none of it is, like, so fucking mind-bogglingly awesome that I think it would change much, frankly.
No, I was really hoping this would maybe shed some light on the fact that it was a good movie at some stage. And
it just sounds like they had extra scenes that they cut down to make it 2 hours.
Man. We were hopeful this was going to be good, but
Barry Allen
in
the fucking
good,
library is not going to do it for me. There's almost no Wonder Woman, actually. Did you notice that? There's almost no Wonder Woman in those scenes. Like, one scene, she's like...
Well, there's no changes because they left her in the movie as much as they could.
And they, and I'm sure that probably added more, too. Snyder probably added... Snyder and Whedon probably added more, you know? Anyway, man, like, let's move away from it because that was fucking... I can understand now why they say, like, investigative journalists, like, get burnt out and stuff because that was, like, a lot for me to take in. Like, Jesus, like I had... You should have seen me trying to hunt around to find this article as well. That was a fucking movie in itself. Like, and I was like, where do I even start? And then Jimmy sent me the link and he's like, it's in there. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. And I go to the page and it's got, like, green for, like, verified, verified, verified. And then other stuff got, like, doubtful, doubtful. I'm like, well, fuck doubt. Like, and so I found this, which apparently was all verified, Stu. Like, I'm reading some of that going, this is verified? Like, I believe it when I see it, you know what I'm saying? Like, one guy going off a month old...
We're never
going
to see any of this stuff.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's move the signal away.
Thank you.
From
thank
this forensic
you. Let's
examination.
Let's move on.
Margot Robbie is developing a totally separate Harley Quinn movie focusing on her girl gang. This is an interview she gave. And it sounds a lot like Gotham Sirens to me, Stu.
It does. This is a reimagining of Gotham City Sirens.
I'm down 100%, man. Poison Ivy, Catwoman, Harley, bring it on.
Yeah, so in this, it sounds like Harley's the... definite lead in this movie
the
with
focal
the others
point, for sure.
Focal point.
Yep.
So we're going to have guest stars, Catwoman, yeah. Poison, like, perfect.
Yeah. Bring it down. And apparently, like, there's, and DC also are so confused, Stu, at the moment. Like, on top of losing all that, because let's face it, if the heads of the studio or the heads of the division are rolling and being moved around, then their direction is, they don't have a direction. And there's three properties for Harley that are currently in development, Stu. There's Harley and the Joker.
Scrapped.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that project. Yeah. There's the Suicide Squad 2.
Yeah, never. Like, these things aren't going to see the light of day.
Suicide Squad 2 might. And then there's this Harley Gotham City Sirens. You know?
I feel like Gotham City Sirens or the Harley Quinn movie might... just because there's so much positive hype with Margot Robbie and there's positive hype with Harley.
Like, come on, dude. How can Warners not realise that, like, just like Wonder Woman's a gold mine, Harley's a gold mine. And you need to strike while the iron's hot. Like, all this, like, oh, we're in development, we're trying to work it out. Dude, we could turn a script around in a fucking 3 days, 2-3 days, really seriously. If we really wanted to, man. Like... and you get the shit moving and get, and you can't just sit around forever going, oh, we're kind of trying to work out a direction on, like, Harley, and also we're trying to work out a direction on Superman. Like, lock some stuff down.
Well, I mean, they do need to figure their shit out, and it's across the board.
Yeah.
And you can't just run a single movie here and there.
Yeah.
And then hope that the rest sorts itself out, because it feels like that's what they've been doing.
Like, Aquaman feels very much like, cross fingers, everyone's very happy with it, but that's not going to solve all your problems.
No, I'm so down on this whole franchise now because of Justice League. Like,
yeah.
I have so little hope.
You're left. In the doldrums.
And yeah, I was so hopeful for Justice League that it was going to be good.
Do you have some hope that James Wan could turn things around with Aquaman?
I'm so doubtful now.
Really?
Like, having seen what the studio's been doing,
yeah.
It's not looking good.
I wonder if, though, the pressure's been off him and he's been able to do like Patty Jenkins did, where she just could push back to the studio and she made her own movie.
Look, possibly. Honestly, they need to get through Flashpoint quickly,
yeah.
Sort their shit out universally, and then just roll with that.
I very much agree with you, Stu. And I've got to say, again and again, I know corporates care about numbers, but it feels like the corporate pressure here and they're sort of changing all the time isn't helping them.
No, it's not. Absolutely,
it's like
it's not.
They feel very confused. Like, this feels like this division is very, very confused, and they're sort of like looking in the mirror for answers that they don't have. Like, it's just, it's weird, man, to be honest, because they've got, character-wise, they've got such a deep character library with deep stories. Like, they've got plenty of stuff they could adapt.
Look, they do. They've just the Trinity alone.
Yeah.
They have enough amazing characters, rogues, stories. They could run a universe with just those three.
And I mean,
honestly don't need any other auxiliary characters. You could run with the Trinity.
Oh, yeah.
And their rogues, and that's it.
Yes, I very much agree.
And you could run
but
an
instead
amazing
they're like,
universe.
Shazam and Black Adam. I'm like, God, two of the most obscure fucking characters. Like,
yeah, and they're pushing for Aquaman. Flash, I kind of get.
Yeah.
I imagine Green Lantern should have been before them.
Yeah.
Green Lantern's more recognisable.
Dude, I would... Like, I pray... I don't really believe in God, but I do pray that there is, like, some sort of a sea change where they start making good movies. You know what I mean? Like, good movies. Not fucking great movies. Just a really good movie for, like, Green Lantern and Flash and stuff. Like, and the Batman stuff, you know? And I feel like
if the Warners absorbs kind of the DC film aspect of it with this whole collapse.
And let's face it, they've had a lot of manipulation of it already. Yeah. DC, they haven't been...
But look, if DC does absorb that film studio, it's going to help in the fact that they can get directors on for single roles and actors on for single roles.
Yeah.
At the moment, I think they're struggling trying to sign people up to like 5 or 6 picture deals.
Yeah.
Like Marvel did that so well.
Yeah.
They locked down a lot of amazing actors early on
in
financial
too.
Slumps.
Yeah, yeah.
That they went, oh, we'll book in for 10 films.
Yeah, yeah.
And these actors were happy to sign it, and now they're kind of saying, well, I wish we'd kind of renegotiated because they're worth a lot more money now. Sure. But
like Hemsworth's a massive star now, whereas he was a nobody before Thor.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that this is what made him a star.
Yeah, of course you could. But good point, though.
So they're looking at much shorter contracts.
Hmm.
So like 1 or 2 picture deals. So you can get bigger talents.
Mm-hmm.
You can get bigger names. You can get better directors.
Can I pitch something to you? Johnny Depp as Riddler.
Johnny Depp should know.
He
would fit in with the current movie universe in that it's shit and it's overrated.
Have you seen Murder on the Orient Express?
I have not, no.
I want to actually see that, the new one. I want to catch it at some point. I guess we're repeating ourselves, but Stu and I are both on the thought, listeners, that we do really want this to be good, don't we, Stu? Like, we're not like the DC haters here at all.
Far from it. I thought Nolan's Batman trilogy...
I actually love a lot of DC.
Nolan's Batman trilogy was some of the best...
Yeah,
DC
yeah.
movies of all time.
And you know what? I've emotionally completely moved on from Batfleck. I'm totally ready for a new person to be cast, a younger person, to let Matt Reeves do his thing. Like,
yeah.
This is where I go back to Stu. I go, even if everything is desolation, we will have the Wonder Woman franchise. We hopefully will have the Harley Quinn and we'll have Batman. So it's not going to be that bad. You know what I mean? Like, if Matt Reeves can develop a trilogy, even as just himself... You know, with his own stuff, he maybe has a cameo from Wonder Woman or something, but he can build his own Batman universe over 3 movies. That could potentially be awesome, Stuart.
I mean, it honestly feels like we're going to burst this bubble before they get there.
Yeah, good point.
At the way DC is going, they're going to ruin the good credit that Marvel is making.
Yeah.
They're going to ruin the good credit that Fox is generally laying down as well.
No, I agree. And the bubble's crashed.
We're going to get this point where another superhero movie.
The mainstream's tied.
The last 5 haven't been good. Why would I bother?
It's the athlete who suddenly gets serious about his career when his knees are gone. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm taking my training really seriously. Yeah, too bad you're physically past it. Like, very good point. So I've actually thought this was their opportunity this year. With Justice League, this was their opportunity to catch up, and they didn't. They did the exact opposite. They fell
this year was their opportunity,
behind.
And they had one hit and one miss.
Yeah, but a big miss, Stu.
It was a big miss.
Yeah, on their linchpin. As well.
Exactly.
On their linchpin move. This was their chance to, if not crush it, at least break even. They didn't do that.
Whereas, you look at the other side of the fence.
I know. It's not even...
Knocked it out of the park.
It's not even close, Stu. They, I know. They've had multiple hits this year. Like, financial and critical.
Yeah.
Like, we forget, didn't Guardians 2 come out this year?
Guardians 2 came out
now,
this year.
Now, it made a lot of money. I know it wasn't received as well as the first, but it was received well.
Received. It was a good movie.
And it was. No, it was.
Everyone that saw it was like, this is a good movie. Yeah. It's not as good as what I was hoping
but
for.
But it was still very good, and it did grow business. Good. And Thor Ragnarok
it made
was
a lot
incredible.
Of money. Thor Ragnarok critically has gone gangbusters.
And shoot, you got to be happy because you were the man pushing. Remember how forward I was going to Justice League? Well, sorry.
Early in the year, I was saying to you, Thor is going to be number 2.
And the closer we got, the more I thought you were right. I remember walking into Justice League, Stu, my expectations were like, I was kind of like, nothing in these trailers is telling me that it's going to equal Thor Ragnarok.
Look, for nerds, Thor has been the movie of the year so far.
Yeah, I agree.
I think in 1 week's time, we're going to see that change.
Last Jedi.
I think Last Jedi is going to take the number 1 spot, and I think it's going to do it easily.
And rightly so. Isn't it hilarious that Disney of it? Like, they're like, oh, more money.
Yeah, Disney's, I don't care which one
it
wins.
It really is Scrooge
McDuck.
Either
way, Disney wins.
Do you think Scrooge McDuck is just, like, loving life right now?
He's doing laps in his pool of money here. Yeah.
He's just got so much. You know how he counts it up? 7 trillion, billion, whatever it is. Like,
it.
And he gets down to, like, 74 cents. Like, right?
Yeah.
he'd be busy little duck right now counting all his money.
Yeah.
How about this, Jew? I floated this one to my sister this morning. John Hamm wants the Batman role and apparently is gunning for it.
Physically, I like it. I think he's a good fit.
Yeah, he's a good actor, looks good.
I feel like potentially he might be a little old.
You've read my mind too, Stu.
He's younger than Batfleck. It's a step closer.
He's got to be 40 though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would cast younger personally, but that said, he's a very good actor. So
he is. He's a good actor, and he's got the build. He's got the looks. He could play Bruce Wayne brilliantly.
Oh, yeah.
Him in a tux playing
Bruce
Wayne.
And he doesn't have the sort of, like, sort of Affleck is... He's a big boy, you know, everywhere
I
around.
Mean, Affleck, he bulked up for that film, though.
Yeah, I know. But I wonder if John Hamm might potentially wear the suit a bit better. I've never felt like a human in any Batman movie has captured Batman in the comics visually. Like, it's always been a compromise.
Yeah, I think Christian Bale got close after the first movie.
Yeah, he probably is the closest. I don't think Affleck did. I think Affleck looks too big somehow.
Affleck, yeah, he was too bulky. Yeah. And Christian Bale was the same in the first movie that he did.
How did Val Kilmer look? Like,
Val Kilmer was a little under, I think.
See, I almost feel they bulk him up too much. Batman isn't always like this. Like, I know he's muscly, but sometimes Batman artistically leaner can look good too.
I mean, I'll tell you, I think George Clooney may have been the closest.
But his suit was terrible.
His suit was terrible. The movie was terrible. Physically, though, I think he was one of the closest.
He certainly didn't bulk up.
No.
Yeah. No, he was lean. See, the suit was just so bad that Shoemaker had, so it's not a fair comparison.
Oh, exactly right. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think the actor was probably the perfect
Michael Keaton
size.
Didn't really bulk up.
Michael Keaton, I think, was a bit under for Batman.
I love his performance. But his suit was very restrictive.
Yeah.
He was very, like, if you remember, it was like watching a robot walk. He barely moved.
They had a few movies like that.
Great performance, though, as Batman. Great performance. And Michael Keaton was not... When he was cast, I mean, I was young, but I remember everyone was like... And I loved Michael Keaton. I was like, Michael Keaton's Batman? like, he was known as a comedian. Then you saw him and you were like, wow, he's really good because Michael Keaton's intense.
Yeah.
You know, he's an intense... Now I realise that now I'm older and I see him act. He's actually just a really gifted actor. Like Christian Bale. Christian Bale is a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, so I think it's watch this space. I hope with the new Matt Reeves movies they do solve that conundrum a little bit, and however they get it, I hope it's a bit more like when you see, you know, like, oh, well, Batman's very rigid, you know? Or he's just very bulky, you know? There's got to be a happy medium there somewhere.
Yeah, there does. I think Batfleck took it a little too far, a little too big.
I think he's just a big guy as well. Like, the problem with
Batfleck
is...
But he's bulked up for the
If
movie.
He's not bulked up, though, he's fat, Stu. That's the other thing with him. Yeah. You know, you never see a slim Batfleck since, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, Chasing Amy Batfleck doesn't exist anymore. He's a naturally big boy. That's just him.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you look at someone like Hemsworths. Mm. Either Chris or Lane, like, they're big guys. They're tall.
Yeah, very tall.
But they're not bulky, like...
No, Batfleck I know was. What you mean. They're very muscly, but it's a different kind. They're also a lot younger.
They are.
Like, Hemsworth's got youth on his side as well.
If you threw Liam Hemsworth... into a bat suit, I wouldn't be opposed.
We're just picturing if you just combine the body.
yeah.
Take the body
let's
of...
Let's make our dream Batman, right? yeah,
like, it's a Ken doll. That's we're getting
weird,
down...
sick fantasy, yeah.
The single of doom is really getting down. We're only getting to the journalism aspect today, Stu.
Oh, there is so little journalistic integrity here.
Do you like how everyone always says Arnie Hammer, and I've said it too, and then just go, Arnie Hammer, he's just the generic-looking guy of all time, like, in terms of, like, leading man.
Yeah.
But he is... But again...
I don't know. I find his acting boring.
Yeah, me too. I was behind back in the Arnie Hammer call based on not seeing anything.
Like, maybe if he was doing, like, I don't know...
Gay
wax
porn?
Figure or something.
what? no, I just mean he's just very... Yeah, exactly. Look-wise, Madame Tussauds or something.
Yeah, if you
it.
Put him in a bat suit and then got him sculpted, it would look good for a museum. But my God.
Arnie, you've always got that Arnie.
But
if the career, which never really feels like it's flying, if it
no,
really
it feels like it's on a very slow simmer, doesn't it?
yeah.
Like
and people...
He just keeps waiting for that right project.
I know. He's just never quite got there.
Two steps up and then two steps back.
Like, I know. He's going constant. Nowhere. Somehow I feel he's got more cash than us.
yeah, I'd agree with that statement.
His cash situation, you know. But he's never hit the big time. Stu, did you see for the new DC live-action Titans show on their streaming service, The Robin? Look, yeah, it's fantastic.
Looks really good. The new costume.
That's what I mean. Someone's actually done that, and I was like, wow, is that for fucking real? That looks awesome.
Yeah.
I actually realize sometimes where I'm like, I don't really need it to mirror the comics. I actually do love how much that looks like Robin in the comics. I hope that the show's good. I'm going to watch that show, man. Like, seriously. Like, fuck it. Like, I'll fucking download it if I can't get hold of it streaming. I'll put that out there right now. If you know, but I want this DC streaming service if it's reasonably priced. But, yeah, I mean, that looks awesome. But we still don't know any details, Stu, on what the streaming service will be, whether it will be an app or what it will be. You know, there's still nothing. Will it be
available? Well, I mean, look, we're assuming it's going to be virtually identical to like Netflix.
Yeah, with a lot less shows.
With a lot less shows. Hopefully either a minuscule price tag, or you're never going to say
that. Like 1 cent.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll have Stu's Super Friends from the 70s and 80s, because that's what I was a big fan of that.
Pretty sure they'd be desperate to get literally any show on that streaming service right now.
Would you watch Super Friends? If you've meanwhile, on the Hall of Justice, I've watched them like in more recent years, and I'm like, ooh. You know? But like,
there's better stuff out there to watch.
But as a kid, though, I remember being like super loving it. Like, it was great as a kid.
Yeah.
I ever wonder, I do a time machine. I wonder, because I somehow never really got into comics as a young kid. Even though I was, like, obsessed with, like, Super Friends and stuff, I wonder if I, as a young guy, like, say, like, 5 years before I got into comics, would have been reading them if I would have enjoyed it. I never know the answer to that question. You know, it's one of the imponderables in life.
One of the things Dave ponders late at night.
Not really, but, like, you know, it's more just my greedy nature, like, because in the end I got there anyway. But I wonder if, like, a kid in, like, early 80s, who was watching Super Friends with a very sort of juvenile presentation, went and picked up Batman, what their response would have been.
Well, I mean, comics in the early 80s were pretty dark.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, they were hitting their darkest point around then.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I feel like they wouldn't get many young kids involved.
Yeah. It always just seemed
unless
like
they were a little twisted, little sick fucks. Maybe you would have enjoyed it.
Well, I don't know, man. I was a pretty happy little guy. I don't know. Anyway, we'll never know the answer to that until we get the DeLorean, and then we can do that kind of, you know, bizarre entertainment on me, and we can really see what happens. I'm pretty sure I'll just lay Batman and the Punisher. That's how it's going to wind up.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not really that deep. Stu, I did a little bit more research. Entertainment Weekly had some photos of the new Dark Phoenix movie.
Uh-huh.
The photos were extremely underwhelming, other than one really good one of Phoenix having, what's her name? What is her name, Stu, from fucking Game of Thrones? Sophie Turner?
Yeah.
As Phoenix, and they had a rock with the hair and stuff on fire. It looked really cool, actually. But other than that, it was a complete snore fest, and reminded me why I don't look at Entertainment Weekly photos, because it's just so dull. Like, you know, like a set photo of someone just standing there, and you're like, oh, fuck. Would I ever pay for this in my life? But anyway, so I looked at it. But what was much more exciting, Stu, was the first look of Aquaman from the movie. Have you seen it, Stu? Bare-chested, ultra-jacked-up Jason Momoa. I mean, Jesus Christ, ladies. Like, he is popping out of that suit. Like,
he's literally already popped out of that suit.
He is the Aquaman. He is Aquaman, isn't he? Like, I mean, Aquaman for me, the lamest of the lame. I'm suddenly like, bring me Aquaman, Stu. I'm actually looking. I'll say this. I'm looking forward to Aquaman, man. I wonder if it'll make money. I think it has potential to be a huge bomb. But I am excited for it.
Look, at the moment, my hopes are so low after the blow that I took from Justice League. I doubt this is going to make much money, if any.
I've got a question for you. I think it'll do okay. But I've got a question for you. Apparently the film is all shot, all done. They've wrapped. Do you think there is... I wonder if these suits at Warner's are pressing on James Wan, trying to like fit shit in, you know, to make it cooler or do whatever. Like, you know, during the editing process. Because they never stop interfering. Like, they're desperate to they must hate the fact they've only got one movie coming out next year. That must piss them off. That would piss me off if I'm trying to rehabilitate my, you know, franchise.
Especially when your competitor's pushing out three.
Yeah, your competitor's like
three, and one of them's going to be the biggest movies that they've ever had.
When you're being beaten by Ant-Man and the Wasp. you know, seriously, when that's what's happening.
Yeah, when you're looking at an obvious B-rate Marvel movie, it's better than anything you're putting out.
And it's killing you, and you're like, seriously, how do we...
Yeah.
Because we've got those characters. We've got the equivalent of Ant-Man and the Wasp. You know what I mean? But we're just doing fuck all with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's like elongated Man and His Wife are basically Ant-Man and the Wasp.
They've got the Atom. They've got
all those kind of bullshit characters.
They're a bunch of, like,
yeah,
D-list and C-list, yeah. D-list characters.
But a good director and a good story can turn that into a nice franchise that makes money.
Unfortunately, they just haven't got the foundations to put anything good on.
I'll say against you, I am available for the role that was vacated by, I believe his name was John Berg. I'm available. And, you know, I'm happy to talk price, talk dollars. Get me in charge of this franchise. Get back to basics. You start seeing a lot more Batman. A lot more Batman universe.
What I'm imagining is a lot of calls from Dave late night going, Stu, I fucked up. What do I do?
Yeah, there'll be some crisis meetings.
I am in way over my
head
right
now. No, Stu, I'll fly you and you'll be part of my team.
That's nice.
Yeah, I like to keep things compact.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, nice. Believe you me, if you think they've had a documentary of Crisis Now, wait till I'm a judge.
Dave's going to have the cameras in the background watching his every move just in case.
Just in case, so we can get something out of this.
Yeah.
I go off script. We've got some Star Wars news here. Rian Johnson, Stu, this was your news hounding, reported that he may not be directing all three films in his Star Wars trilogy and that his new trilogy will focus on new characters and places. He also revealed he was never in talks to direct Episode 9 despite the positive buzz at Disney about the upcoming movie Last Jedi.
So he's been given his own trilogy.
That's yes.
Made a lot of news.
And everyone's been like, oh no, it's the Republic.
Yeah, remember which that would be was awesome.
Yeah,
But basically, he's saying that he's not directing all three,
mm-hmm.
And he's going to direct one, possibly two,
sure,
but be more of a showrunner.
Makes sense.
Similar to what J.J. Abrams did for this trilogy,
mm-hmm.
where he's been involved in all three. He directed the first one, so he's not going to be as heavily involved as people wanted. But also, it was interesting that he was never even offered Episode 9.
Yeah, maybe he was burnt out completely and just needed a break.
Well, no, he didn't. Like, he didn't say no. He was never even offered it.
Okay.
Even after the, like, obviously Disney saw he was doing good work.
Mm.
They saw he was doing so much good work that they were like, movie hasn't even come out yet.
Yeah.
This could be a bomb. Not going to be a bomb.
No.
But we don't even need to see any statistics. We will give you a trilogy of your own movies with the biggest name in movies.
Yeah, well, maybe he was...
So they had a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, maybe they've got to move forward on the next movie while he's still finishing. Maybe that's part of it, too.
I mean, potentially, we've had actors that have... We've had directors before that have shot two movies same time.
Yep.
That's how they did the last Hunger Games. That's how they did the last Harry Potter. That's how they did... Like, a bunch of movies... Where the last one was kind of split.
Good point, Stu.
They filmed two or three.
I actually hate that, don't you? Like, it's Hunger Games Part 1.
I don't like the whole Part 1, Part 2 thing.
I just think it's really bad marketing because people get really tired of it.
It is, and I think that's exactly why it's now Infinity War, not Infinity War Part 1.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like they knew a long time ago that they were going to offer him... Something a lot more than just episode 9.
Maybe he had a conversation with him where he's like, I really want to break some chains and blaze some new boundaries, which you can't do in the trilogy, but you can do it in your own trilogy.
Like, from these reports, it looks like the opposite has happened.
Mm.
They've gone to him and said,
"Yeah,
what can you give us? Like, if you were going to pitch whatever you wanted, what would you pitch us?" And he basically said, trilogy of movies... Whole new list of characters, whole new list of places.
I like it.
Everything
it's universe building.
New.
It's universe building inside the movies.
Exactly.
It's franchise building, really.
And that's why people are saying Old Republic. Because you've got enough source material, completely separate time, characters, places.
Sure. And it's like, is it like thousands of years? Like, it's a long time.
It's thousands of years, yeah.
And so no one lives between them, do they?
I mean, if there is anyone that's kind of like a god character.
Sure.
I'm not that deep into it to know those guys.
No, but we're coming up on the show.
Obviously, Yoda's a few hundred years old, but not thousands.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm down for it, man. I think it's a really cool idea, and I don't really care, man. Like, part of me, tell me if I'm wrong. Part of me is a bit like when I hear it's like before, I'm like, okay, so nothing matters. But then I'm like, but if it's so far before, then actually, just like watching a Rome TV show, you get invested in the time period. You know what I mean? Like, we will all go to ashes sort of thing. Like, yes, it will all eventually just die off, and then thousands of years later, the new series kicks off. It doesn't really matter.
Well, I think the other advantage to doing thousands of years ago is that because only serious fans know the time period gap, you don't know how it ends. You don't know what happens at the end of this trilogy.
I've got no idea.
Like, you're left completely open as if it was a whole new going forward in time instead of backwards in time.
Maybe when it ends with, one day there'll be a whole new hope. That would be funny.
Let's just hope the writer, the published writer, everybody.
I just like going off the titles. Let's just hope we don't get a Phantom Menace. Oh, yeah, no, I look, dude, I dig it, man. Like, it's Watch Your Space, and the cool thing is, Stu, in a week's time, we'll have watched Last Jedi, and we can just chill out and enjoy it and, like, then discuss it.
Yes, we can.
And you're pumped up for it, I know.
So pumped up for it.
Yeah. It's kind of snuck up on me, actually, because of all this superhero fucking news all the time, like fucking day in, day out, you know, like, which kind of half burns me out, but I also am addicted to. Star Wars is just kind of off in the corner, but then when it comes, I'm like, fuck, I love Star Wars. Like, it's almost like...
And notice how there's no controversy. Like, you don't get any actors whinging that I don't want to be part of it.
Yeah, you I want to segue out in a cool way.
Exactly.
The only one who ever hated it was Harrison Ford. Like, he was classic.
Who even then showed up, did his part, and left, and was like...
For the sweet cash.
I'll keep showing up if they keep paying me this kind of money.
Yeah, exactly. He was just like the grumpy old man sort of thing.
Yeah.
He was just like, cool. Yeah, that was fine. Yeah, we all loved it about
it. It worked.
Yeah. Stu, Zachary Levi, who, if I'm right in saying, is Shazam, yeah?
He is Shazam, yeah.
Yeah, has told reporters that his last words in the MCU as Fandral were cut from Thor Ragnarok, leaving him without a single line of dialogue. Oh, my heart fucking breaks for you, Zachary. His final words were, for Asgard, as he changed into face Hela before being impaled and killed, along with Volstagg. Well, that was just them clearing those guys off the page and the board, really.
Yeah, so basically what they were saying was, all of the Warriors 3 were given a slightly larger role.
Mm-hmm.
They all had more lines of dialogue. The only one that actually made it in was Hogan the Grim.
The Asian guy?
The Asian guy with the mace.
He battled pretty hard.
Yeah, he did.
I like that. I like that guy.
But we saw more from Volstagg. We saw more from Fandral.
I'm
running into battle and kind of having a last stand.
Yeah. Instead, they were kind of given a very on-screen, just very perfunctory death.
Yeah, and Levi's come out and said that... Mm. He was kind of a little bit pissed off.
Well, Zachary Levi,
he was having a decent send-off, and then all of a sudden it was...
Boo-hoo, Zachary Levi. You're a nobody who's now cast as Shazam. Like, Chuck was a long time ago. I didn't even know you were Fandral. A lot of people didn't even know that. Like, calm down.
Well, he wasn't in the first Thor movie. He was recast.
Okay, well...
So he's been Fandral in two movies now.
Including the one he was in for about 2 seconds.
He was in Dark World and then this one.
So not a lot.
Not a lot.
Yeah, sorry, pal. That's what happens in editing. Like, you got cut out.
Actually, was he in Avengers Age of Ultron? Was there any...
Unless he's in the scene where it's Volstagg and someone carries the shit to the Collector in one of the movies.
No, that's...
It's Volstagg.
Volstagg and Sif.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it for him, man. Dude, sorry, Zachary, but, like, you're having a cry from... Stu, he should be in the gym jacking up if he's going to be Shazam.
Let's be honest, he's not going to be Shazam. We know that.
Yeah.
He's cast as the lead, but he's going to be playing like an aged Billy Batson. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. I think he needs to chill out, chill the hell out, because I don't need to hear his whinging and complaints. one thing is, though, Stu, I'm a bit sad about Volstagg, because I like Volstagg in the comics, and he got...
Volstagg's always some good comic relief, isn't he?
But he just got annihilated. That's Volstagg, a pretty major Thor character, just to get kind of wiped off the board.
Well, I mean, Fandral and Hogan, the Warriors 3 all killed pretty
much. I noticed Lady Sith was absent, luckily.
Yeah, Sif's not in there, so we've still got her out.
Probably a good one for her to skip, really, that scene.
Yeah, a good movie for her to miss.
Well, I think as well, like, if they want to kind of position Thor, do female Thor, Lady Sif's obviously a candidate at least.
I mean, yeah, we've now got three front-running candidates for a female Thor.
She's got that show, Michelle Watches It, whatever it's called, Blind Spot. She's in that, the actress.
Yeah, Jamie Alexander. Yeah,
she's a good actress.
So we've got her, we've got Valkyrie now, and we've also got...
yeah, Valkyrie.
Who's right up there now.
If you recall, I said she was as important as RDJ in the franchise. I was getting a little excited, wasn't I? When I made a little comment.
So Tessa Thompson could be in there as a female Thor.
Yeah, I mean,
and then we've got the actual female Thor, Jane Foster, so...
That's not going to happen, though.
I seriously doubt it.
That's a million... Like, they'll take the concept at some point, but they won't take Jane Foster. Played by Natalie Portman, who looked like she would prefer to be anywhere else.
Although she would get to shave her head again. She did that for what is it? Beef Vendetta? That was a while ago.
Jesus, we're really dialing it back there. Stu, news item here from you. Do you want to read this out? Something about Joss Whedon?
Yeah, so Joss Whedon has been suspiciously quiet following the release of Justice League.
He has been very quiet.
He has not been in the media much. He was linked on Twitter once. Mm. Basically, he liked a tweet that was trashing Steppenwolf. That said that he looked terrible, wasn't well done.
He liked it.
And Joss Whedon just clicked a cheeky like and then removed it pretty quickly.
Right.
That's pretty funny, though. A few fans saw that.
That's kind of his subtle dig, I guess.
Yeah. But on Tuesday last week,
mm.
He commented on a post informing that he was responsible for the song Everybody Knows.
Love that song. Leonard Cohen. Everybody Knows.
So Leonard Cohen's the original. This one was the cover done by Sigrid.
Oh, it was really slow, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was much slower.
Way prefer Leonard Cohen's version, but anyway.
But the weird thing is this song was linked to this project months before Whedon was officially signed on as director.
Hmm.
But
he was already involved writing stuff for them, remember? But he was called in to do writing for Justice League prior to
a little bit of writing, yeah. But the fact that he's choosing songs that go with it, and he influenced the trailer. This was when Wonder Woman was out.
Yeah, well, he's Joss Whedon. Like, what do you expect? If you bring him into the franchise, like, he's going to have some input.
Well, yeah, but what it seems is that he's had way more input than anyone ever thought.
Yeah,
he's staying very, very quiet because he's had a lot of input in this movie that's...
Bombed. Oh, I hear what you're saying, yeah. Well, what it points to, I think, is that Snyder was on the way out prior to the tragedy anyway. His position of power had greatly reduced. They bring in Whedon, who brings his own cachet of power and was suggesting changes. You are right, though. I get you. He's trying to avoid any flack.
Well, look, the news is that this happened months before anyone linked the two together.
Mm. I linked them.
He was writing, but he certainly didn't have any creative control.
In my mind, Stu. As soon as he was announced to be Batgirl director, and they did that big thing of bringing him over, I knew something was up. I knew they were bringing Joss Whedon into the stable. I made these comments on the Signal. Go back and check the tapes, kids. I was ahead of the news cycle on this. Like, if you bring an actor of director of his caliber, and the other director is under enormous pressure for stuff that's underperforming. And he's involved in writing.
Look what else this says.
What?
A director of this caliber involved for this long and the movie's still fucked up?
Yeah.
Like...
I don't know. You're the Joss Whedon man over there.
This takes quite a bit of shine off Whedon.
Yeah, well, yeah, man. I've often said Joss Whedon's not a fucking safe bet every single time. Like, his work at times...
No, but, like, we're happy to throw Snyder under the bus for this movie and say that Whedon tried his best, and people keep saying, oh, but they were removing Whedon scenes when they cut it down to 2 hours long.
They were.
Whedon has been involved from day one, according to this tweet.
Yeah.
He has been way more heavily involved than anyone said. He has been doing this with Snyder.
Mm.
Like, they worked together at the same time. It wasn't replace one with the other.
Mm.
This movie was shit, and Whedon's equally to take some of this blame. Like, he's right up there.
Look, Stu, from everything we've seen, everything, like, what we saw on screen, the rumoured, whatever you call it, like, shots, you know, that were done, none of it says, well, this movie would have been a great movie. Like, none of it. It's a poor performance. Like, it's riddled at the core. Whoever wrote the script on the very first day, Stu, whoever turned their script in, it wasn't a great script. Really.
Yeah.
You know, like, really. So I agree with you. Yes, Whedon is quiet for a reason, because he's kind of like, well, if I can just stay quiet, I can hang around at Warner's, I can do my Batgirl, potentially do plenty of other projects much bigger than Batgirl.
Yeah. But he has gone very quiet.
Yeah.
When you look at...
Probably makes sense to do, though, as well. Like,
he's looking out for number one.
He's not even a directing credit on this movie, despite the fact he's had massive creative control at times.
Yeah.
It's also tricky, though. Like, I do feel much like Geoff Johns. It's a very turbulent situation to be flung into, Stu, midway through a movie, trying to turn stuff around. It is tricky. And many movies
failed. That's what this thing is saying. He wasn't in there to turn it around. He's been there from day one.
Yeah, but he wasn't connected, Stu. When Zack Snyder was doing pre-production for Justice League, Batman Superman came out, Whedon wasn't on the scene then.
He was. That's what this tweet says.
Do you reckon it comes out, he's before then?
He was saying what songs should be in there when. He was...
Yeah, okay. Like, we'd have to look at the timeline.
Clearly pulling in some influence.
But the minute the suits got worried was when Batman Superman came out. That was when they got worried. Before that, they were happy with Snyder. They were confident in Snyder.
Yeah.
That was when they were like, then the numbers, ooh, BBS shit.
Came out, and
the numbers, and then they're looking at also the fan base and the drop offs, and they're like, we've got a problem here.
Yeah,
this isn't going to hit $1 billion. We've got Zack Snyder. Like, it's fascinating, but Whedon's not a perfect director. Like, sorry, kids. Like,
oh no, far from it. Yeah. He's got a lot of good credit at this point in the superhero genre.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's making sure he keeps on hold of that.
Yeah.
Like, tenuously.
Smart move, though. Every director has hits and misses, like in Hollywood. Every single director. Good ones, bad ones, great ones. You know, Scorsese's had movies that haven't done well.
Sure.
Like, sorry. I mean, it's just the way it goes. We'll see. Stu, you've got Netflix has officially renewed Stranger Things for a third season following the success of season two. And then you asked me a question, have I watched either season? I've certainly watched all of season one. We've watched about half of season two. We've just been busy and haven't finished season two.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed Stranger Things from what I've seen, and I'm down for a third season. Have you watched both of them? Sure.
I haven't finished season two either. Yeah. So I've seen the first season and loved it.
I love the first season.
Yeah.
We, in fact, we've just been busy, and we watched Punisher instead. And this last week's been pretty busy for us, so it hasn't even been on our radar. We actually completely forgot about it. But hearing this, I'll go back over December when I've got some time off, and we'll definitely watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
the Duffer Brothers have been greenlit for a third season, which is great news.
I think it's great news, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Stu, did you watch this Jurassic World Fallen trailer?
Yeah, so it debuted on Thursday in the States.
What did you think of the trailer?
It's going to make money, but man, it's a shitty premise.
I did. Well, it's like a volcano's on the island. That's basically the thing.
They basically went, all right, our last movie, we made a dinosaur called Indominus Rex. And people were dumb enough to fall for this.
It made a lot of money.
It made a ton of money.
A lot of that's based on the goodwill built up in the original Jurassic World. Yeah. Jurassic
Park. So they went, all right, we need an equally amazing premise for this movie. And they went, okay, how about the island is going to explode and we need to get the good dinosaurs off?
I like the idea of the volcano, but I hate this shit of how there are good dinosaurs now. Give me a break.
So they are going back to the island to save some of the dinosaurs because the island is going to
explode. I once wanted to vomit when I heard that whatever her name is it Bryce Howard?
Yeah, Bryce
Howard. When she goes to, what's his name? Christopher, is it Pratt?
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
When she said to him, but you left old Blue back there. I was like, seriously, like a dinosaur? Like, really? Like,
look, this movie seems like it's got Chris Pratt doing a bit of humor.
Yeah, but that's...
It's got the same kind of action that we've grown to love from this franchise.
Grown to love, yeah. Or grown to tolerate.
Man, this feels tired, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got to say, I liked Jurassic World for what it was in the cinema. You know, like, liked is what I'm saying. But when I watched this trailer, man, I was like, wow, I feel like I've seen this 1,000 times. Like, this really feels boring. I was very under-thrilled by this trailer.
Oh, very underwhelming.
Yeah. I think it got a fair bit of Twitter outrage. I think people on Twitter were hating on it hard and stuff. I wasn't really even aware of it. I went in completely fresh, watched it, and I was like, wow, that was very uninspiring.
And I mean, this movie made $1 billion.
Oh, it made shitloads. It made way more.
Absolute ton of money.
And they weren't predicting that. This movie was not tracking to anything like that. This movie made a fortune for the studio.
Yeah.
It was a surprise, actually.
I mean, it was obvious they were going to do a second one.
Oh, of course.
Like, from day one, when that movie came out and it did those kind of numbers.
Of course, man, of course.
They're going to do more.
Do you think it will do it again? It may well do it again, though, because it's a big kid audience as well, you know, this Jurassic World stuff.
Kids love it. Look, I don't know. I'm not sure when it's coming out. I know it's set for release next year.
It's obviously next year, so at some point.
But I feel like we've got so many other big blockbusters coming out next year that unless they time it right, it's going to run into serious competition.
Oh, yeah. I think they might have some problems. But then again, Stu, no one was predicting the first one. There was almost no heat on the first movie, and it blew it away.
Stu. True, but it didn't have anything to compete with. That was it when it came out. It came out
the same year as Age of Ultron, but it came out a long time after it. It came out in the same year, though. I know that.
Well, yeah, same year. But, like, I'm saying there was nothing in the same month as it that was competing
with it. Yeah, it came out at a good time, so that's what you're saying.
It picked the perfect time of year to come out. There was nothing competing against it.
Very crowded year next year.
Whereas next year, Marvel's got 3, DC's got 1.
Mm.
You've also got a new Star Wars project. Is the Han Solo.
The Han Solo on Howard's.
Han Solo's coming out next year.
I'm so excited about that.
So that's five big movies.
Yeah, Jurassic World 2, whatever it's called, Fallen Kingdom, especially with that trailer about how it's a volcano, Stu. How many shots
do we not have the first Avatar movie coming out next year? Is that when the first one comes out?
Probably, I don't know.
Because I'm feeling that's going to do big numbers.
Did you see that if Fox actually owned that? So if Disney buys Fox, they'll own the Avatar rides.
It's kind of a massive, sneaky thing that no one's talking about, right?
Yeah, it's just funny, you know. And also, James Cameron the other day said, if Avatar 2 and 3 underperform, there won't be Avatar 4 and 5. He made that comment the other day.
No, thanks, Sherlock. Like, if movies flop, there won't be any more. This is breaking
news. But, like, James Cameron, you've spent, like, 10 years on this shit. Like, Jesus Christ, what are you coming up with? The history of the world.
I mean, look, you know my feelings for the Avatar franchise. I have no love for those franchises.
I'll see it in the cinemas, though, because you never know. James Cameron might blow you away, man.
I will illegally download. I refuse to give money to this franchise. Like,
The first movie
was not good.
I'll go in and watch it, Stu, and I'll give my review. We'll see. My review's going to be all over the shop.
I imagine it's going to be visually stunning, but lacks plot.
Probably, but... Anyway, we'll see. I mean, fuck, I don't really care. Like, I'm just like, at this point, I agree with you. I mean, Avatar is... But still, Avatar, I mean, he'll want to... I don't know if it is next year, actually, to be honest. I've got a feeling it might be 2019 that's coming out. Okay.
So, Jurassic World... Jurassic World, obviously, if the trailer's coming out now, normally there is July, a six-month-ish lead-in.
Yeah.
Which means it's going to be coming up in, like, June.
Okay.
Which is just after... It's a month after Avengers.
Okay.
So that's good. At least it's...
Yeah.
Gives not trying to time. Compete with the biggest movie of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
People love it, though. Well. But kids love dinosaurs. That's one thing, honestly, that the first movie proved. They love dinosaurs. And the franchise does have a lot of lovers. But I heard a lot of people from my limited research this morning after I watched it, there was a lot of actual hate of the trailer. People apparently the trailer's been getting like mocking reviews and stuff. It was a very underwhelming trailer. You know what it reminded me of? Some of those Justice League trailers before the movie came out. You were like, "Wow, this feels really bland."
Yeah,
I like trailers that grip me in some way. And if you're just doing dinosaurs running away from a volcano, if I've seen that shot before and I feel like I've seen it like in a lot of movies, I'm kind of getting flashbacks of other movies, and I'm like, this just feels the same. Like, okay, Chris Pratt's running away from smoke. Okay.
He did like four times in that Tron trailer.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling it. And the bubbles, and it just all felt like, let's go again. It was almost like, you've done the ride, repeat.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm not feeling it, man. I don't know if I'll see it in the cinemas. I probably will. I've got a friend of mine who's a huge Jurassic World fan, just loves the whole franchise, and he wants to see it in cinemas. So.
Jurassic Park 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I saw those in the cinemas, loved them.
Yeah.
Jurassic World, I saw in the cinemas, did not love it.
I didn't love it. I liked it for what it was, but I was under no illusion that it was like
felt, good. For most of that movie, it felt like a decent popcorn flick.
Yeah.
Where you just sit down, you switch off, and you just shovel popcorn into your face.
Very much. Very much.
But they really pushed it with these plots.
Yeah.
Like, when you're talking about making your own dinosaur called Indominus.
I hate that shit, man. I hate that shit.
That was bad.
Like, dinosaurs are cool enough.
Yeah.
I don't need specially created ones. Like, imagine the dinosaur that you've always wanted. I'm like, dude, I like the original dinosaurs. Like, give me a fucking Stegosaurus, a Triceratops. Give me a T-Rex. Like, they're cool dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, give me a Brontosaurus. We haven't seen much of him. You know what I mean? Like, give me some underwater dinosaurs.
I know, they keep teasing, like, all these amazing dinosaurs in the tank, underwater.
Yeah, like...
And then you get nothing from it.
Don't give me this bullshit scientifically created new ones. Fuck that shit.
Yeah.
Give me, like, an Ice Age world or something as well. Like, in a zoo, you'd have Ice Age section. If I can do dinosaurs, I can do mammoths. You know, give me Neanderthal Man. Give me some bullshit like that. You like the stuff I'm pitching, Stu? Neanderthal Man comes in the Jurassic World.
You started
world.
Off on a good track, and then you just kind of wandered down this weird Neanderthal
path. Oh, fuck it.
Path.
Like, I'm just... Fuck it. Like, just throw shit in. Throw some sabertooth.
I feel like this is exactly how they get their problems.
Throw sabertooth in there. In the ice world. Yeah, you're feeling that, aren't you?
Not even a little bit.
Well, whatever.
Where are we
man?
Getting Ice World from? Where is this?
Ice World, the Jurassic World, man. Another world called Ice World, and we bring in the Ice World people.
This sounds terrible. Well, it sounds like they're going to run with it.
You know what?
They'll roll with this.
Okay, you got get ready for this. They've got the volcano. You know what I'd bring in? At the end, the comet. we're going to simulate this shit. A comet's going to crash
in. I'm pretty sure that's Jurassic World 3, isn't it?
Bring it in. Bring it fucking down.
They're going to get the dinosaurs into space. I'll make this announcement.
I'm willing to take the DC role, but if I can't get that one, put me in charge of Jurassic World and get ready for Ice World.
You'll slum it with Jurassic World, huh?
I'll slum it, yeah. That's right. And there'll be no scientifically created bullshit dinosaurs.
I don't think there'll be any science at all, Dave. I think we're safe for that one.
I love dinosaurs, man. Triceratops are my favourite, man. Charging in with the horns. Love those bad boys. Get like a fight between that and T-Rex. If that hasn't already happened, it probably has.
Definitely already has.
Get another fight going on. Stu, I know you're a big fan of this. Ant-Man and the Wasp has been described as Marvel's first rom-com.
Dave, the look of disgust on Dave's face right just, now.
It's just a snore noise from me, but like someone out there will love it.
So this is Marvel pushing for their genre-specific movies. Mm. They've had a lot of success branching away from the kind of generic superhero film.
Sure.
So Guardians was kind of like a space opera.
Yeah.
Winter
Soldier was a political thriller. Winter Soldier was a
political thriller.
Yeah.
Avengers Infinity War was meant to be a heist movie.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah.
It's what's been described as so far.
Yeah.
I'll tell you in 5 months what I like it.
Well, there you go. That was a heist movie.
So, Ant-Man and the Wasp been described as a full-on rom-com. They're going lighthearted. It's being released around Valentine's Day.
Matthew McConaughey in it? Because then it would be a rom-com with Kate Hudson. I mean, yes, I get it. That's what they're trying to milk.
So, yeah, they're going for the really lighthearted.
And I'm sure a bit of comedy as well.
Oh, look, I mean,
Paul Rudd, very funny. Paul Rudd
obviously has comedy chops.
I honestly enjoyed the first movie. I've got to be honest. I'm not an Ant-Man fucking fan. I couldn't care less about Ant-Man, but it was actually
I think that's what they're hitting on. They're like, okay, nobody out there is an intense Ant-Man fan.
Yeah, if you are.
It's a pretty minor character.
Take a hard look. Yeah.
No, this is not a serious film. Like, these guys don't have the power sets to take on villains.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to go somewhere else. And they went for the rom-com, lighthearted,
I dig it.
Thing. They're going to go searching for the mother, the original Wasp.
Right.
Who was obviously shrunk down, went into the quantum zone.
I fell asleep, as you call in that scene. I never actually seen that.
Of course you did.
Fell asleep in the cinema.
Who, by the way, Michelle Pfeiffer.
That got me real interested.
So
she's in this movie?
Yeah.
Days I love Michelle. Yeah, I love Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah,
first big ticket buyer, Dave.
Yeah. Catwoman in the leather suit, man. Michelle Pfeiffer.
We've got a lot of things going for it, but it's been described as a rom-com, which might be interesting.
God, I mean, let's just hope they don't do a Scarlet Witch fucking Vision rom-com, because then I would want to throw myself off a bridge.
I'm all for that as a rom-com. I'm so much for that.
I'm so not for it, dude. Like,
I will buy your ticket.
Yeah, well, I mean, good. You'd have to.
And I'll see it twice.
It's rare that I actually hate characters. I hate those two characters with passion.
Oh, dang.
And the fact that it's a rom-com with those two, Scarlet Witch and Vision, I would just wish that Thanos would just come down and crush them with his foot.
I mean, Vision's not going to fare well in this movie, let's be honest.
I'll enjoy it.
Part of his head is what Thanos has put in his fist.
I like that scene.
So, not looking good for Vision.
Could be the end of Vision.
It's not going to be the end of Vision, let's be honest.
The death of the Vision.
Let's be honest, it's not going to happen.
No, probably not.
He'll power down for a few movies, he'll be back.
He'll be back. Avengers Infinity War has become the most watched trailer, amassing 230 million views within 24 hours. I believe Stuart counted for 2 million of those.
I think you and I count for a few of those.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it about 4 or 5 times before we did the show last week.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
Very good trailer. I showed it to Michelle. She enjoyed it.
So this is first 24 hours after the trailer gets released.
Really?
To put this in perspective,
Jesus.
Jurassic World Fallen?
Yeah.
11 million. And before today, I was like 11 million views in 24 hours.
That's impressive.
11 million
in 24 hours. That's more downloads than we get.
Only just. But
yeah, it's close, but yeah, you know.
So they're getting 500,000 viewers every hour.
How many people are there
in
the world? There's what?
7 billion, a little more than 7 billion people.
Cool. Okay. So that's a fair amount. Like, fuck.
That's massive. 200, and the second place was It, the new It movie that came out.
Really?
With 197
million. What about Star Wars? I would have thought Force Awakens would be up there.
Star Wars The Last Jedi pulled in at 120.
Okay, so they're
Force Awakens is 112.
Cool.
Both make the top 10, though. So
they're up there.
They're right up there. Fate of the Furious and Thor Ragnarok come in at 3 and 4.
Okay.
The odd one in this list, 50 Shades Darker.
Oh, I'd heard that. No, I've actually...
114 million.
Yeah, no, I remember that being an article. That
The rest you'd all expect. Beauty and the Beast, obviously a massive movie. Incredibles 2, the new trailer.
Yep.
Look cool. You also got Captain America Civil War running out of the top 10.
Okay, so a lot of them you get. Like, it's the big
blockbuster. So the one that doesn't appear there for me would have been the original Jurassic World. The one that came out made $1 billion. Like, it's not on this list.
It really didn't come. I remember when it came out, it had no heat on it at all. It just really didn't have any heat or expectations to be tracking like that, and it just came out and blew it away.
Yeah.
Disney were actually mad. They were like, Avengers Age of Ultron has underperformed compared to Jurassic World, which made, I believe, more money.
Yeah.
Which is one of those lightning in a bottle situations. That's interesting, though. Stu, I'm actually fascinated by this new report. Tarantino has come up with an idea. This is according to Deadline. Has come up with an idea with a Star Trek film that he's sharing with J.J. Abrams, and it's leading to the assembly of a writer's room of scribes at Paramount Pictures who will hear Tarantino's take, and did hear it. And if it works out, Tarantino might direct it and Abrams will produce it. The movie will be rated R, Stu.
I love this idea.
Yeah.
It's a genre Tarantino hasn't hit before.
He obviously must love Star Trek.
He's a Trekkie fan. Like, he is a Trekkie.
I think this is brilliant. I think this fits
with what Tarantino does so well, which is he finds a genre he hasn't worked in. He spends a bit of time. He gets an amazing cast. And he makes a single movie that is brilliantly done, then never touches that genre again.
Yeah, I mean, it's so left turn, though. Like, you just wouldn't have expected it for the franchise, even. Like, Star Trek's kind of like it had the J.J. Abrams movies. They didn't make the
J.J.
kind of money.
Like, J.J.'s done a lot of sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
He's the perfect director for something like a Star Trek or a Star Wars.
But can I ask you this? Did you enjoy the J.J.'s movies? I didn't really enjoy them.
The Star Trek ones?
First one I enjoyed. The 2 and 3 I didn't at all.
Dumb, really. Popcorn fun.
But Star Trek can
be
more
I'm not
than
a
that.
Huge Trekkie. I would prefer Star Wars over Star Trek.
I'll take Star Wars any day of the week over Star Trek, but I do like Star Trek enough, but I do wonder how it translates to a modern audience. Like,
it's suffered in kind of more modern times in that the TV shows dropped off the radar.
The TV shows were always better than the movies.
Exactly. Like, and the TV shows now...
Yeah.
Have dropped right off the radar. Yeah. They're still out there. They're still getting repeats. They're on every day.
Oh, yeah. They're around. But like, you know.
Young audiences aren't watching.
And it's a shame because they're really good. But that's life. But Star Trek Discovery's out now. I know a lot of people hate it and some people like it. It's very mixed in the Star Trek community.
Very divisive, yeah.
Robert Meyer Burnett on Collider is hilarious in his hatred of it. Yeah. He's a real Star Trek guy.
But they are proper Trekkies, though.
No, yeah, real hardcore. Yeah. Like, he's a nice guy to listen to talk to, though. He's very knowledgeable. He's even quite funny when he's so lacerating, you know? I heard him talking to John Sumters on Word Balloon, and he was both barrels just unloaded on it, man, you know? I've not watched it, so I can't honestly comment, but I have a very soft place in my heart for Next Generation, and I've watched, you know, when I was in uni, I watched quite a lot of Star Trek. But I never felt the movies, the J.J. movies. I enjoyed the first one, but they never got close to capturing the true heart of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Tarantino, though. When you said to me Tarantino doing Star Trek, my brain had to do a kind of like reconfigure.
Yeah, there's two things that don't seem to fit together, right?
Yeah, and I mean, nothing in Tarantino's career has suggested that he wants to do a sci-fi, proper sci-fi movie, you know? But then again, he loves genre.
He loves genre. So, and he's always done something and switched.
And
this is one of the few completely unexplored areas.
Do you think
of film.
He would do? It wouldn't surprise me it wouldn't stun me if Tarantino was like a Kirk guy, and did a movie of Captain James Kirk. You know, I when I think of Tarantino, it wouldn't surprise me if he likes the old stuff.
I mean, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it just wouldn't surprise me at all.
And the fact that it's an R-rated movie, I think, works really well.
Yeah,
I mean, Tarantino has always. For me, the other thing that's weird is that rating. The rating fits with Tarantino really well.
Yeah, but Star Trek, it's never gone
with
the
Star
direction.
Trek, there's never been any kind of gore in Star Trek.
Yeah,
Star Trek has always marketed itself as a family-friendly property.
And also...
So whether they're movies, and they kind of get up towards M ratings.
Yeah. And it has a strand of intellectualism in it, too. does. It honestly does. And it's not quite as popcorn.
Could tackle that. No doubts for me he could tackle that.
Oh, yeah. He's a talented guy.
But in all the movies, the one, like, constant is that he doesn't hold back from gore.
No.
If someone dies...
Or language.
If someone dies, there's going to be blood.
Yes.
Pretty much every time Tarantino has killed someone off, he's not holding
back. And Tarantino can do it in a way that you feel it. Like, you know, he's a gifted director.
Absolutely.
I am fascinated, actually. And I think this is probably why it's such a good move for the studio, because there's not much heat on Star Trek right now.
No,
even with Discovery. Even with Discovery, I know it's doing quite well numbers-wise. But in terms of the movies, they underperformed. Mm-hmm. And Tarantino, everyone kind of goes, Tarantino's doing Star Trek? Okay. That might be something worth seeing. I mean, he wanted to do Bond for a long time, but the family didn't want him to do it. He was chasing Bond for a little while.
Him doing Bond would have been amazing.
I think he was quite open to it. But he wants enormous freedoms, which they weren't prepared to give him.
Yeah.
Star Trek are probably more like, actually, we want a hit. And you know what? The Tarantino cachet is quite sizable.
Oh, yeah.
If you put it this way, Star Trek 3 didn't see it in cinemas.
And look, I think the other thing is, because there's no younger audience, the R rating isn't going to hurt them.
Yeah. Yeah, youth has fled from the Star Trek franchise.
There's there was a lot of negative press associated with an R rating in that you lose that younger audience.
Yeah.
But Star Trek doesn't have a young audience.
I wonder what he'd do. I'm fascinated to hear. So apparently what he was doing was he did a hard pitch after the whole thing.
Yeah.
They loved it. And now some screenwriters are working on his treatment, and then probably what will happen is he will come back and then rewrite it after he's done the movie with Charles Manson or whatever.
Yeah, the Manson flick, which is coming out the next couple of years.
Which makes sense. That would be Tarantino's next project. This is if it all lines up. I'm sure Tarantino is quite mercurial and could flip and then just walk away from it, you know, as well.
I mean, Tarantino is in such a great position now.
He
doesn't need to be loyal to any project.
No, he's his own man.
Like, he can do whatever he wants because what he's doing is so successful.
This tells me that Tarantino must have been a Star Trek fan for a long time that we just don't know about. It wouldn't surprise
me. Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, like, I can almost picture... This is what I picture with some of these... I like it. You see it in comics, too. Some of the guys, they just like a certain period of stuff. They're like...
He's the right age that he grew up with the prime Trek.
Yeah, yeah. Like
when the Trek was pulling out its best stuff...
Yeah.
He was probably a young kid just lapping it up on TV.
And, dude, even in the 90s, let me tell you, Star Trek was big, real big. Because Next Gen was in full flower. They had Deep Space Nine. Then they had Voyager. Like, let me tell you, as a kid and then as a young adult in that period, we didn't have, like, Netflix. I don't mean to sound like an old man on a hill, but seriously, there wasn't the streaming options weren't an option. It just wasn't there. So Star Trek was on regular TV, and honestly, if you were a sci-fi fan, you were watching it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were a geek, basically, you sort of sucked it up a bit. You were sort of like, this isn't Star Wars, but you know what? I'm going to watch it. And actually, they got into some interesting areas and stuff. But actually, that's the only reason I got into it, because it was like late night period. I was going through uni and stuff, and I was kind of like, yeah, okay, I'll watch it. I'll give it a chance sort of thing. And then I really actually enjoyed it. I surprised myself with how much I enjoyed it. It didn't hurt that I was watching it with some cute girls at the time, too. We're all getting stoned together. That actually what led me into it. But no, it was interesting times. Stu, so moving on, there was some news that came out from BuzzFeed that Marvel Television is working on Marvel Rising Secret Warriors, an upcoming feature-length animated film about a new generation of diverse heroes, which is pretty much like your Squirrel Girls, your, what's her name, Kamala Khan, Captain Marvel. Like, and look, I've been following on Serious Issues, and the kids are excited, man. Very excited. I think it's really cool that they're doing it, like, because it's about time. You know, and there's obviously a market there, and they've got to test out how popular this is.
There's a huge market out there for it. This is kind of, it's hitting all the buzzwords of right now, isn't it?
Exactly. And so that's happening, and the kids are excited, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they've got to get them new stuff, man. I've got this one as well. I thought this was interesting. Do you like G.I. Joe, Stu? Are you familiar with it at all?
I didn't grow up with it. I've seen the last two movies that have come out.
Yeah, I thought I liked them. They were pretty cool. I've read a few of the comics, too. Look, they've got a new character. Dawn Marino is the new female Snake Eyes character from G.I. Joe, a real American hero created by Larry Hama and Nitho Diaz. issue 246 marks the beginning of the dawn of the Arashakage storyline, which seeks a Mexican-American teenager, Dawn, take on the mantle of Snake Eyes, one of the most iconic members of the JoJo team. The pivotal issue in Hammer's long-running JoJo saga. He's been writing it since the 80s, man. Larry Hammer's a good writer, too. Has now sold out, as have the preceding issues. I just thought it was interesting that they've got this new sort of Snake Eyes character, one of the biggest characters in the whole franchise.
Yeah.
And they're flipping it. And I saw the art. I've got to say, actually, that's one thing, actually. The art is absolutely fantastic. I saw the art on, like, Facebook, and I was like, shit, that's good art. It was really dramatic. So, I mean, that got me excited. But Stu, something that's getting me even more excited is it's Weekly Comics! Yeah, complete with a snort as well. I'm just so happy with it.
Like a pig in shit.
Now, Stu, turning to Weekly Comics, surprise, surprise for the listeners out there, we did Batman 36, which, Stu, I'll turn over to you for your views. It's pretty much... Batman and Superman. Batman's getting engaged.
I'm loving it. I really enjoy this little lighthearted
role. Oh, I love it.
So Batman and Superman, apparently best friends.
Supposedly, yeah.
And they're both kind of questioning this at this point. But neither of them have spoken to the other one since Batman's engagement.
Yes, to Catwoman.
So Superman's kind of wondering if they can trust her. And he's got Lois next to him kind of counselling him, saying... Well, you know, we trust Batman. Obviously, we can trust his decisions.
Yeah, fuck off, Superman.
And then you've got Batman kind of stubborn, don't want to call Superman.
Why didn't he want to call him, though? I didn't understand why Batman didn't want to call him.
In Batman's eyes, he's not in the same league as Superman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And they were both kind of saying the same thing, that they're amazed that the other can do what they do and remain a good person.
That's right, yeah.
So Bruce was kind of saying, you know, Superman's the big guy. You don't bother him with little things like this.
Sure.
Like, I'm just a human. He's a god.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It was a really fun little comic and look at how they...
Yeah, and beautiful art,
Did
you think of Catwoman?
The artwork was gorgeous.
The way they're doing Catwoman now, I just love it.
This current run of Catwoman looks incredible.
She does look fantastic.
I would love a figurine of that Catwoman.
Yeah. Well, I've got two up there, Stu, the animated, and then I've got the purple one, and I could easily fit another one in.
Oh, yeah, you could. Modern Catwoman looks incredible.
She does, and they're still keeping that design that Darwin Cook created.
Yeah.
That's still his design that he created but way back then.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing, isn't it? And
good little comedy moments, like when they're both breaking into this building. Superman and Lois walk through the front.
Did they know they were going to be there?
No.
Oh, okay.
So Superman and Lois walk through the front doors as reporters.
Yeah.
Get in the elevator and get changed in the elevator. So Superman comes out in full costume.
Mm.
Meanwhile, Batman's breaking in through the roof with Catwoman, climbing down on an empty elevator shaft.
That's right. And earlier in the issue, it was kind of action scenes for both of them, wasn't it? This was the culmination of it all.
Yeah, we see these great little phone calls between them saying,
"Yeah,
just call him," and Batman saying, "I'm busy," and he's like beating up a
I loved it when criminals. Batman goes, "You don't need to come with me. You're not my sidekick." She goes, "No, I'm your partner." He's like, "I don't need a partner." It's like,
well, yeah, and she goes, "Yeah, I know."
Yeah.
But I'm still going to be there.
And the flip side.
And the same thing happens with Superman. Lois is saying, "I'm going to go in there," and he's, "Let me protect you. I don't need protection." He goes, "I know. I'm still going to be there."
Yeah. You kind of do, Lois. I mean, history...
Of the four, you're the weak link in this.
History tells us that you have been protected many times by Superman.
Beautifully drawn comic. Fun written comic.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this. It's setting up next week's double date.
Yes, and it ends
which has been a good 80 years in the making.
I loved how Lois just reached her hand across and said, "Hi, I'm Lois, you must be Catwoman."
I love that awkward... Like, Batman and Superman just kind of stare at each other like, "Didn't know you were coming."
They're just like the guys at the barbecue.
And then all of a sudden the two, like, wives step out like, "Hi, nice to meet you."
I think it's cool. I really do. And I like the... I really love this depiction of Catwoman. She's not...
I love that Dave is all for this, but he hates the idea of a rom-com in movies.
What?
This is effectively a rom-com, you know that, right?
Yeah, but I prefer it in the comics. Like,
this has romance, has comedy. Also,
look, dude, I'll give you a rom-com for the Marvel. I don't mind. Like, enjoy Ant-Man Wasp, dude. I don't really fucking care. But this is the Catwoman, Batman stuff. I care about this. I would love to have... Well, I enjoyed Catwoman in, like, Dark Knight Rises and stuff. I love Catwoman and Bruce having interactions. The one interaction I don't like is when sometimes you get a writer who treats Batman as completely hostile to Catwoman. I find that just boring. That's a boring relationship. I like when there's some chemistry. He kind of cuts her a break, but not too much of a break.
Yeah, there's got to be a bit of give and take in that relationship.
Yeah, it's so much more pleasurable. Otherwise, don't bother having her. You know what I mean? Because she's her own strong character and she can do her own thing. So, no, I really, really, really like Tom King's run. And I think this is a great little issue. I'm giving you a 9 out of 10 as a one-shot.
So am I. Yeah. Yeah, completely agreed.
Now, Stu, we also did, keeping with our Batman theme, Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Issue 1. It's a continuation on from the first series. I found it was an enjoyable issue. I wasn't super hot on the art.
I really enjoyed the artwork.
Yeah, I thought you might have, actually. It's kind of your style.
Yeah. Very sketch artist. Kind of, I don't know. It was painted. I thought it was beautiful. I thought you got a lot of motion out of it. Felt very dynamic.
It's an enjoyable issue. Got a great ending. Great twist at the end.
Great ending. I love them exploring what was left after Ra's al Ghul and Shredder have kind of separated and died. I don't know. I quite enjoyed this issue.
I would definitely recommend this to readers of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic. It certainly is a good issue. I mean, I'm giving it a 7.5. I thought it was a good issue.
I would put it as an 8. Okay. Yeah, really enjoyable.
And seriously, Turtles fans, I believe they're writing these in continuity with the Turtles comic. Less so for Batman.
Of course, yeah.
Less so for Batman.
So you need to buy two titles.
you don't really need to, but it's just more like they reference it a little bit, I think, because it's coming out of IDW.
Sure.
I'd like to see this partnership between IDW and DC. I think Marvel would be good idea for Marvel to do more of this kind of stuff too.
And this is where DC is hurting Marvel.
Yeah.
Marvel's got them hands down beaten in movies and TV. Oh,
so it's not even close, but...
Not even close there. But in the comics... DC is more than pulling its own. It's 100%. Leading the charge here.
And that's sometimes makes it...
DC's got better crossovers. DC's got better one-shots.
Yeah.
DC's current event
is
amazing.
DC doesn't seem to care. They'll take a chance with a crossover.
But it works.
And I agree.
Marvel took a chance, and the fans did not like it.
Yeah. No. Stu, I've got some interesting comments here. We did the DC Universe Holiday Special.
We did.
You didn't do
Dave
it.
Dave did.
Now, well, I only read it this morning, but I've got... It's interesting, Stu. So it's very much an anthology comic. The Spirit of Christmas is the thing, okay? Yeah. And every anthology, you get usually a couple of good stories, a couple of stinkers, and a couple that are okay. This has maybe the worst Batman one-shot I've ever read. Let me pitch this to you, Stu. Written by Denny O'Neill. So you think Denny O'Neill, like respected writer, like editor from the 70s,
normally,
80s,
yeah,
90s.
Capable writer.
Here's the story, and it takes place over about 6 pages. Basically, it kicks off with a grandmother going through the snow, okay, trying to get into a house, going, oh, we're cold, we've been walking all night, and they turn her away and say, you... with a young child, you it's not our problem, go away. She dies overnight, and the cops pick the kid up, and, oh, sorry, your grandmother's gone off to a better place, and he's in the cop car. And then the grandmother, as a ghost, turns up next to the kid. Oh, don't worry, I'll never leave you. Okay. Flash forward 20 years, and there's a hold-up, and this guy with a gun is holding hostage in the family of the house that turned him away. So he's there, and the grandmother goes there going, just kill them, just kill them, just kill them. Batman's called. This is literally the story. Batman's called in. He comes in, dispatches the guy with one punch and takes the gun off him, and the hostages are just left there. Oh, no, thanks, Batman. And then the ghost is there, and he says that the guy says to the ghost, oh, Grandma, I don't want you to stay here anymore. The end. Like, I was like, are you fucking for real? Like, this was the first fucking story in the book.
That's terrible.
It's that bad. Like, it's literally what I just said. I was like...
Like, this is making some of your superhero pitches look good.
Yeah, but like, if I was going to actually get a pitch that I was going to write another story, I would flesh out it more. It's literally that lame. I was like, how is this even connected to Christmas?
You're making me feel pretty good about missing this. Like, I'm happy
I missed that was how it started, and that was terrible. There were, though, a couple of good stories tucked away in the issue. There was a stinker by Dan DiDio. Oh, Dan DiDio brought his Zed game to one story that I just, like... I actually started reading. I was like, I can't do this. And I'm getting a free copy, and I still can't do this. And so I've almost given up on the comic. But it had a good one about Flash and Teen Titans. Like, a lot of it wasn't bad. You know, as a Christmas read, Stu...
Sure.
It was, some of them were okay. As always with an anthology, the art sometimes is a bit sketchy, but it was overall good. Like, it's a good issue. I don't know what it costs at the stands, though, but you get to the end of the...
It's around a $10 price tag. Yeah,
it's not worth 10 bucks.
That's what I thought.
But here, get this. You get to the end of the comic, I flip over, Batman and Wonder Woman, written by Greg Rucka. I'm like, why the fuck is this not on the front cover? And I was literally, I almost given up on the comic because it was like two stinkers towards the end. I flick over. Okay, so here's the story. It's called Solstice, which I believe is like the longest night of the year. The solstice.
Winter solstice.
Winter solstice, yeah. So anyway, winter solstice, basically it's Batman doing his thing, very much like Batman and Superman. You had the dual narratives, the dual narrative, and Wonder Woman doing hers. It was sending chills through my spine reading it, Stu, just because Greg Rucka just hits the heartline straight away, and he's not doing anything he hasn't done before, but he's just doing it very well. And get this, and so you're seeing what each of them are doing. They're both doing sort of internal monologue about like the light and darkness and that kind of thing in humans and stuff like that. So it's all stuff you've seen before, but then it gets to the end, and it's Bruce, you know, out of costume, and Diana standing beside him, and he's like, "Oh, geez, Diana, how long have we been doing this?" And there's before this tree, and they're burning, there's like a huge fire, and she goes, "Oh, you know," he goes, "Why don't you do it with Clark, like burning the fire at during the solstice, like the winter solstice? Why do you do it?" She goes, "Well, I can't do it with my sisters from Themyscira because she can't get back there." So I do it with you, and eschewing the wine and the song, of course. And he's like, "But why don't you do it with Clark? It would appeal to the whole Eagle Boy scout in him." And she goes, "Because for us, the darkness is so tempting. We see it. He creates his own light, whereas we have to, you know, we're sort of combating the darkness within ourselves." And they light the fire, and they're just standing there as the fire goes out, and it's just Batman and Wonder Woman. And I was just like, "Man, Greg Rucka, you fucking brought it." And, like, the art's good, not great, but it's good. And you just, like, this is obviously something Greg Rucka's just put together in, like, you know, half an hour. And you're just like, "Man, why wasn't this up front of this comic?" And so it ends the comic on, like, a pretty cool note. And, oh, the other thing with it is it kicks off with, basically, Bibbo, who's, like, Superman's pal, who runs a bar. He's in a bar, and John Constantine's there. It's a good setup, actually. John Constantine's at the bar, and he's going, "Oh, the world's just terrible." And he's got, like, Trump on screen and all kind of crazy shit happening. And Clark Kent's there drinking a club soda. Apparently he comes in every year. And he's going, "Oh, but, like, what's the..." Even Clark goes, "What's the point? Even Supes can't turn everything around." And Bibbo's, like, Superman's biggest fan. He's like, you hold that talk. Let me tell you a story. And then it's, like, all the stories. And then it closes it with Clark Kent and Constantine sort of closing the bar, and they go for a walk, and Constantine gets invited over to Clark's house for the Christmas spirit, like, and it ends on, like, there's plenty of the stories, you know, are all about Christmas.
Plenty of cheesy Christmas messages.
Yeah, there's a Green Arrow, Black Canary story in there and stuff like that. But is it worth 10 bucks? No, but like this Greg Rucka story,
it's... I mean, look, when I saw it, it was like, it's close to 100 pages, so it's a...
It was a long read, but it's a quick read.
A single issue, it's a big read.
Yeah, it's a quick read.
It's about $10. I think it's $9.99 at the moment.
Yeah.
On the shelves, like, it's a lot of money.
I always wonder, Stu, I think of that kid who was me, who was like about 10 to 12 years old, who kind of likes the comic characters but doesn't read comics. Would I throw this to him or her on Christmas and be like, "Here you go, kid"? Or would I just give them a trade and just go, "Enjoy this"? I'd probably just give them the trade.
Trade every time.
Yeah. But still, did you like the description of the Greg Rucka story? Because it really is pretty cool. I just like the idea of him and Wonder Woman friends at solstice. I'm like, man, I could watch a fucking movie about that. Like, the relationship... I mean, the relationship between Bruce and Wonder Woman. I mean, we've seen it explored. It made me go, "Jesus, Greg Rucka, you've done great things on both titles. You're doing this Lime Sharps coming out next year with Batman Wonder Woman. Let's get Greg Rucka on the titles, Stu. Let's start a campaign, Twitter campaign." I mean, you know, Greg Rucka, I'm sure, does what he likes. You know, they've offered him many times DC projects, and he's come back, you know, when he wants to and stuff. But Batman Wonder Woman written by Greg Rucka, you down?
Yeah, I mean...
I'm 100% down. Stu, this... like,
look, Greg Rucka's big enough. He's calling his own shots at this point.
He's calling his own shots. Well, I'm calling a shot for him. I mean, I've written... Stu, this was me, almost falling asleep from the previous story. I saw his name in Batman Wonder Woman, and I kind of, whoa, what's happening here? Have I stepped into a fantasy world where, you know, this shit's happening? And then, and from the very beginning, it was his depiction of Wonder Woman, as always, was sending chills through my spine. You know what a Wonder Woman fan I am. And then I was just like, man, it's so cool they get to spend solstice together. And I was kind of like, can I come? I won't annoy you much. So anyway, look, that's the best part of it. I'm probably making it seem better than it is, but like it was.
I always assume that when Dave rants for 5 minutes, you know that he's enjoyed it a lot, but everyone else is sitting there going, it's okay.
No, it was better than okay. It was good. So anyway, Stu, wrapping up Weekly Comics, Captain America 616, I thought was a big improvement.
696
on, even. 696, sorry. Only four away from 700. Stu, we gave plenty of shit to Mark Waid's first issue back in the saddle.
Yep.
This was better, I thought. It was enjoyable. I actually enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, this is a fun week. This is what the weeklies are meant to be.
Yeah.
A fun single story where he shows up in this small town and all of a sudden there's a villain.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, very much villain of the week, swordsman fighting over a dam, but it was done well, I thought.
Yeah, so the not reincarnated, but the new swordsman.
Yeah, I didn't quite even. I mean, I don't even know who the old swordsman is. So
the original swordsman was the guy that trained Hawkeye.
Oh, okay. Then I do know. Okay, fair enough. Who was a villain as well?
Who was a villain, and Hawkeye was a villain, obviously, in his first appearance.
Yes.
But swordsman died, and this is a guy that's taken over the costume, taken over the name,
and he's pretty much just trying to make a name for himself.
Yeah.
And when Captain America rolled into town in quite an amusing scene, he thought he was there to capture him, whereas Captain America didn't have...
Yeah, he sees... Over. Like, Cap obviously makes the news wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Cap was just there to see a small town.
Mm.
Cycling
in his journey across America, Stu.
Yeah.
Searching for the country's soul.
So, Swordsman thinks he's there for him, plants a bomb, plants... You know, it does villainy stuff.
Do you think that this is enough for your Captain America needs, or do you like it when it goes a bit deeper, Brubaker style? Or is this doing it for you?
For a short period of time, I think this is nice. I think this is a nice palate cleanser.
It's a good point, Stu.
It's good to have this kind of don't need to think about it, pick up an issue and run.
Yeah.
15 minutes of good reading, and then you can put it down and forget about it for a while.
I'd almost throw this to a kid. Yeah, you're like Cap.
Yeah, exactly.
A younger kid. This
is exactly what gets people involved.
Yeah.
And then after a few of these, you then run with a story for a nice 6-10 issue run.
Yeah.
Go back to some of these guys. Like, this is the perfect filler.
Yeah. This was a good job. We gave it both barrels to Mark Waid in his previous thing. I got a bit of heat on the serious issues. One guy labelled our decision to give it, in my words, almost 0 stars. Bizarre. And I told him it's personal taste, pal. Take it or leave it. Do you agree?
I agree you're bizarre.
Do you like my... Well, I said it's almost empty as a soda commercial. I was quoting myself from the show. I was, you know, as usual.
I love that you've now got an outlet to quote yourself.
Yeah, I know. I do too. But this guy who thought it was so bizarre that we didn't like the first one should be pleased, I guess, that we did enjoy this one. Well, I mean, I'm giving
him a... He probably hates this one.
maybe he does. Maybe, yeah, he's like... You know,
what do these people like?
It's so bizarre. I'm giving it 7 out of 10, Stu.
Yeah, for me, it's a 7. It's a really solid... Single issue. It's perfect, light-hearted camera photo.
Everybody's
Now, Stu, I am so interested to hear what you think about our trade of the week, which is one of your suggestions, Green Arrow Quiver.
Yeah.
10 issues.
It's quick 10 issues, though.
Yeah, it is. Kevin Smith?
Yeah, Kevin Smith writing. Mm. So this is on the tail end of his movies.
Yes, career. And it was when he sort of flirted with comics quite heavily.
Yeah, he had a bit of a dalliance with
this. Would be considered probably his most acclaimed comic run.
Absolutely.
Believe he did 15 issues at least. This is the first 10 issues. I'll hand it over to you, Stu, but it's basically the return of Oliver Queen, who'd been killed off several years before by Chuck Dixon, actually, who then brought in Connor Hawke. Probably a good few years.
Son is the new Green Arrow,
which they ran for a period during the 90s, but this is 2001 and they very much wanted to reintroduce Oliver Queen.
Yeah, they kind of, this was a chance for them to talk about all the originals. Like, that's what they kept wanting to push. So it shows up with a random Oliver Queen showing up with a big beard,
homeless, vagrant,
homeless, style. Doesn't know what's happening, making trick arrows out of bottles of bleach and soda cans.
And he's stopping a mugging, basically.
Yeah. Look, the first 5 issues of this, I really enjoyed.
Hmm.
They are lighthearted, fun issues, a little bit wacky, a little bit out there, making fun of Green Arrow as kind of this campy, over-the-top character.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that a boxing glove on an arrow works for this character...
I like his boxing glove
...is
arrows.
Ridiculous, but it's cool. Hilarious and fun, and I love it.
Yeah.
And they kind of, and Kevin Smith is writing this well.
Yes, I thought
I really enjoyed these first 5 issues, like, a lot.
I would say this. I thought that it's not great, but it's actually very enjoyable.
It's incredibly enjoyable. It's fun. It's not brilliant writing.
No, it's quite clunky at times.
It fits with this story. It fits with these characters real.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the story of him trying to figure out, first of all, how he got back.
He's amnesia.
And secondly, you see all the JLA, especially Batman, kind of suspicious about, is this actually him?
Yes.
How did he come back?
Because Superman saw him die. So there's no doubt that he died.
Superman saw him die. And Batman said, that's the best eyewitness testimony I've ever had.
Yeah.
Soup saw him die.
And more interestingly, and I thought this was an interesting touch, he's only got memories, basically in the 70s, Green Arrow and Green Lantern went on a road trip across America.
Yeah.
And it's a famous period in the lore. And basically, his memories are they've just come back from that trip. So the last 10 years...
So he's basically missing 10 years before he died.
And that's 10 years DC time. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
And he's younger than when he died. Because when he died, he was like probably about 50.
And that's what Batman figures out. I love that when he first shows up at the moon base...
Mm.
And all the JLA members are going nuts. Like, they're all saying...
The Watchtower, Stu.
The Watchtower. Mm. Sorry. They're all...
It's okay.
They're all loving that he's back. And then you see Batman kind of in the shadows.
Yeah. He
comes down and just clocks him. Just knocks him out and drags the body back to the Batcave.
Because they're all really stunned originally, aren't they?
Yeah, none of them.
Aquaman finds him first, isn't it?
Aquaman's the first person that finds him.
It goes Aquaman, then he has a crossover.
He introduces him to everybody else at basically the same time. So Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter... Soups are all there.
Wow, Kevin Smith had no idea how to write Wonder Woman.
No, he did not.
Oh, my God, Lord.
Luckily, she's only a very minor character
in
the story.
Yes, and in his version of Wonder Woman, she has no patience and is a temperamental lady, it seems.
Yeah.
The opposite of Wonder Woman.
I was reading this going, this is not great.
I was just like, Kevin...
It's a tiny character. Yeah. I'm gonna walk past
In his story, Wonder Woman is just window dressing. I was like, well, thank you. You didn't at least have a full crossover with it because you've got no idea.
Yeah.
So,
grateful for that it's small.
But. Yeah, it's small dose. So he went with, like, she's a ill-tempered, impatient sort of woman, it seemed. Like, and I was like, all right. Hey, but he certainly had Batman.
He had Batman down pat.
Yeah.
Martian Manhunter plays a small role, but I enjoy it that he's constantly saying, can I please scan you? Like,
oh, yeah, because he wants to know why he's amnesic and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
And Batman, with the... just unconscious body, figures out that he's missing all the scars from the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Batman, with his creepy level of detail.
That's right. He knocks him and takes him back to his Batcave.
Batcave. And then he's looking at, like, honestly, it's creepy detail.
Yeah.
He knows all the scars that are on every other person of the JLA.
Yeah.
And he's looking at it going, His body is 10 years
old. He knew some of the history, like where he got a scar and stuff.
Oh, he knows where all the
scars came
from.
There's actually a bit of a deep dive on bits of DC lore.
Yeah.
I
could tell reading this, this was written by a fan.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin Smith has been reading these comics for a long time as a fan.
Yeah.
And he can now come in and say, how would Batman know that this body is 10 years younger?
Mm.
Well, he knows that this scar is here, and he knows this scar is there, yeah. And...
it was kind of like, well, this isn't the best story ever, but it's actually a bit of a page-turner.
To that point, I was loving it.
Yeah, so it sounds like you had a drop-off, though.
Around issue 6, we see the introduction of Etrigan, the demon.
Oh, that was painful.
And from that point on, where it kind of got
Jason
mystical...
Jason Blood. And then we got to Heaven.
Jason Blood, and there was the Heaven stuff. That second half felt like a drop-off.
Yes, and it felt like stylistically Kevin was getting a little tired and he was trying to spin his wheels a little bit.
It felt like he couldn't figure out how to adequately explain Amnesiac Green Arrow without going completely mystical.
When you went to Heaven, I got what it was, but I thought that was really cheesy.
So meeting up with Hal Jordan.
Well, Hal's his big pal, so he had to have, because I noted he went Aquaman to Batman team up. Okay, because they did a Batman team-up.
Yeah.
Then Hal. You have to have Hal, because Hal's his best friend. But Hal was Parallax and then the Spectre.
Yeah.
And he was still the Spectre, I believe, at this genre.
Still the Spectre.
Genre, which is what... And so you had to pay off the Hal connection, but Kevin Smith went in, I thought, a very strange direction, which was, we're going to be very literal... We're going to go to Heaven, uh-huh. And I really thought it was cheesy.
We're going to have Ollie team up with... Ollie.
But all the heroes are there. So, like, Barry Allen, who died in Crisis, everyone's okay in Heaven.
Yeah.
It was very Narnia, like, Last Battle.
It kind of, for me, whenever you see that, it removes any kind of consequence.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we could die today and we'd just be... Shoot, if we die today, we'd just be in Heaven.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everything would work out.
And
it does kind of...
Yeah.
Takes away some of the stakes from previous comics.
He didn't do... any of his... Because people have done heavenly storylines or done Afterlife. He didn't do anything special with it. It was very, very generic.
It was a bit generic. The writing kept at the same pace. There was still quite a bit of humour involved.
Yeah. And he got very... he then decided... And I wonder... I really... If I had Kevin Smith, I would ask him, did you... And spoilers, kids, for fucking a story that came out in 2001.
15 years ago,
Stanley... Yeah. Did you always intend for him to be a villain? Because I don't know if he did.
No, I got the... When you go back and read it, there's villainous clues everywhere.
Because I didn't like that story, how that wrapped up. I thought that was really lame.
I just think it didn't go anywhere.
Like Stanley and the kid and the monster. I was like, wow, we're getting into some creepy territory here. And we're tiptoeing around it. But I was like, this you are right, Stu... I was really... Because I didn't expect a lot from this. I don't actually think much of Kevin Smith.
No, see, when I saw Kevin Smith on Green Arrow, I'm like, I know both these people.
Yeah.
I'm not huge fans of either one of them.
Oh, Green Arrow is okay, done well by a good writer.
See, Green Arrow for me is not a top 10.
No, well, he's probably not.
There are 10 other characters I would rather read.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith is not a top 10. There are 10 other authors I would rather read.
I've read Kevin Smith comics that have been terrible.
So
terrible.
I wasn't expecting huge things.
No.
But when I started reading it, and I had it split into two.
And
two
trades. I texted you, didn't I? I said, I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
I really genuinely was. I was like, this isn't great, but it was very, the first five issues, you're right.
Yeah, like I had it split into two trades. It wasn't collected in one issue for
me.
The first trade I was reading going, this is way better than I was expecting. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah.
Flew through those first five issues.
Yeah.
And then I put up the second one, and I'm like, oh, this is getting a bit weird.
The demon didn't help.
Etrigan's always painful for me.
I'm not a big fan of the demon. I know I am the Jack Kirby.
Whenever they're kind of
back, but
forcing rhyming into writing.
But his rhyming was pretty loose.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, demon for
me is
one of
those. Like, he'd write two lines worth of dialogue and then rhyme the last word with the next two lines.
It was like
of
rain in Spain
word.
Kind of thing. That was his extent of rhyming.
That would have been better than this.
He was just talking and then he would
talk
like rhyme
for a moment. Yeah. You'd have the last word. Then you'd talk for another few minutes and the last word would rhyme.
Yeah, I did feel like Santa Kim's, but that's actually not rhyming. Like,
yeah, it's not rhyming. It's just having two words that are the same at the end of a sentence.
Yeah, that was... You are right, Stu, actually. And it does colour my perception of a book I thought I was going to enjoy a lot more as when I started. I was like, oh, this is actually going to be really good. And the end, I've got here, the heaven scenes, to me, felt a little childish. It stripped characters' deaths of drama,
and all
for the emotion of everyone's okay. Like, it was very fan service-y. Also, I've got a bit more here, actually. I did enjoy the transition from Aquaman to Batman to Hal. Like, the idea of it, how he did that, the structure I liked. I thought the concept of having an Oliver Queen come out from 10 years ago was really cool. I thought that was actually a really neat touch.
It was. If he could have found a better mechanic...
Paid it off better.
...to make it possible, it would have been great.
Well, even, Stu, do it mystically, but don't go into that absurd level of detail. You didn't need that, like...
No, if you just said that Hal brought him back...
Yeah, like...
And left it there, you didn't go into heaven at all.
It actually... Yeah, the heaven really kind of was... Pretty bad.
Like, have Hal pull him aside to that other place.
Yeah. If heaven's going to be dealt with in a comic, you know how it's better done? It's better done that you see it spoken of, but you don't see it. You don't show it. And he really showed it. Like, he was like, let's spend more time in this fantasy land where everyone's like, okay.
Yeah, now, and then Barry Allen comes running.
I've got a comment here. I noticed this with Kevin Smith. I've read Starman by James Robinson, okay? Beautiful comic, Stu. We'll do it at some point. I mean, it's stunningly beautiful. He paints a portrait of a whole city. He uses a lot of narration and does that sort of omnipresent storyteller where he goes, Stuart's sitting in a chair. Meanwhile, outside, Michelle's doing... You know, he uses that style a fair bit to set stuff up. Suddenly, Kevin Smith decided he wanted to try his hand at Starman narration, and it was painfully obvious. Because remember he was doing, like, meanwhile, Stanley can't dream, and but let's go somewhere else, dear reader. That sudden stylistic change midway through course correction of his run really, I thought, was on the nose. And then I noticed that I suddenly realised what Kevin Smith's doing is he's doing a tour of all his favourite bits of DC. And
yeah, it's absolutely a fan that's been given an opportunity to write a series.
But I'll tell you
one of the bits that I loved most reading.
Mm.
And then he tried to do his version of it.
And I don't know.
Some bits worked, a lot of it didn't.
He was better. You know what he was better doing? He was better doing it at the start where he was doing a regular comic and would just reference some past events.
Yep.
But when he decided he wanted a tour, and he wanted to go on a little tour of Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic, because let me just tell you this, Stu, in Sandman, I don't know if you've read it, basically Dream, okay, who's the lead character in Sandman, okay, at the beginning of the Sandman comic, he's imprisoned by this sorcerer, and Dream was very weakened, but the sorcerer was trying to summon death and basically hold death in like a, you know, sort of circle of some sort, like a sorcerer's circle. He fucked the spell up because he's just a third-rate conjurer, and he got Dream. And Dream was basically stuck there for like about 100 years within a circle until he could escape, and that's how the Sandman comic starts. Okay, because Dream's not evil. But so he was imprisoned. And obviously Kevin Smith's a huge Sandman fan and decided, like, what we need to do is go down to that basement and see Dream there. Beautifully drawn scene. Added zero to the story.
Yeah.
And as a reader of Sandman, it was so obvious. I was like, oh, are we going to go down? I'm like, I know the story of Sandman so well. It's so beautiful. And there's no way that this can really do much with Green Arrow other than, Stu, it was very prequelish. Like, kids, do you like Han Solo? Well, check this out. And it's like, his Han Solo was a toddler. You know, something like that. It was just it was fan service. And it was such obvious fan service that I was like, oh, you know?
Yeah. like I said, the first five issues were great. He was still coming in fresh. Mm. He was doing what he does best.
Yes. I think he got a bit lost, maybe, in his own...
He started... It felt like he wanted to do a best of little tour.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And he picked... The first five issues, he picked the ones that he was already strong at. And then he started having to pick the ones that he wasn't as strong
at. It's a shame he didn't double down on his own story then.
He really should have. It would have been a great read.
Because he set stuff up like Maya, who then joins Young Justice, who I loved as a character. She becomes Speedy. She's actually HIV positive, Stu. Doesn't come out in this issue. Gets revealed later. Really interesting character exploration in the 90s. Good discussion. Good point at the time. I had a big attachment to her. I didn't know Kevin Smith created her. I didn't know this is where she started. I just didn't know that. Funnily enough, Green Arrow for me has never been a character, but until I read Mike Grell's Longbow Hunters a few years ago, and I've been reading Chuck Dixon's Connor Hawke.
Yep.
Great stuff, because guess what? It's good writers who are just following their own story, and Green Arrow is as good as you make him. Like, he's such a generic character. he, you know, but a good writer can do something good with him. You know, yeah. he's that kind of character. I did like, I will say though, one thing I did like, I liked how Kevin Smith really doubled down on Green Arrow the socialist. Like, because you know how he rants? So some of the best moments were he calls like cops like blue fascists when he sees Aquaman. Yeah. He like carries on how like he follows the rule of kings, which is, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It was good stuff.
Again, writing in the first half was great.
Yeah. Now, what would you give it? I mean, it's, I agree with you. The ending is actually pretty poor. The stuff with Stanley, how about how Stanley's a gay guy and then he's not, and he just says to Green Arrow, what was his quote? What's a better way to get in the heart of a liberal than tell them you're a fag? I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that look, came.
For me, the whole book is a 6 out of 10.
A 6, yeah.
The first 5 issues are an 8, the second 5 are a 4.
Yeah, I was so up and down on it because funnily enough, the first 5 are by no means perfect, but they are entertaining.
No, but I really enjoyed it. Like, yeah, for me, the first 5, if I just read the first half, it would have been an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
It is a fun page-turning read. It does what it's meant to do.
And then it got laboured.
It's by no means perfect.
No.
But it's him doing what he does well.
Yeah.
The second half, it's not him doing what he does well.
It got very thin.
It's hard to read at times. Mm. Some of the lines are cringeworthy.
Yeah. And some of the stuff about, like, heaven is a bit much.
Exactly. It's fan service at its basest.
I mean, dude, so, if I was in DC editorial, I'd be like, Kevin, we can't just have everyone's okay in the end. Like,
yeah,
doesn't matter, kids, what happens if... Doesn't matter if Black Manta kills Aquaman because he's just going to go to heaven and it's all going to be okay. Like, yeah, literally, so, that's what it was. Yeah.
So I've got it as a 6 out of 10.
Fair enough. Look, for me, there's a lot of ups and downs. It's a very soft 7, but I'm really saying to readers out there, as you're saying, it's the front end that's actually good.
Yeah, if you've got an option of picking it up as 2 separate trades like I did, just get the first one.
And I believe he did. They sell it as the... I think he did 15 issues. The sort of like masochist in me doesn't want to read the remaining 5 because 10 was a pretty decent haul.
The first 5 went through quick. The second 5 took a while longer. Like for me, that was a comfortable length for a week.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was doable. Totally. I was
you're reading like 1 or 2 issues a day. It's maybe 15, 20 minutes worth of your time.
And the first few, you're knocking them through them.
Oh, you fly through those.
Because the writing's, let me tell you this, Kevin Smith isn't winning any awards. It's generic, but it's fun. You know? Yeah,
it works.
Yeah. Did you notice with the lettering? Obviously, sometimes the lettering was really crammed in. The lettering was really weird. Like, it was kind of like, you could tell it was trying to, he'd probably rewritten it a lot. I'm trying to fit it into the word balloons. at times, the lettering was kind of odd. But I think we've discussed it pretty fairly, you know. And what did you think of the art as well? The art was, at times...
For me, it was enjoyable. I didn't have anything against the artwork.
It was very 90s.
I felt like it fit with the story.
Yeah. Yes, I think I agree.
Because a large part of it was flashbacks. And, like, it fit with that... Him coming out of a period of time that was just that out of step with the rest of the world.
Got a question. At the end, did he still have the younger body but then the older mind?
So, yes, he had the 10 years in heaven Hawkeye brain in the 10 years younger body.
Right, yeah. Because really that felt like that could have been dealt with in like one page, but he spent like 3 issues on that, you know. It's funny because when he first did Heaven as the big electric towers, I thought it looked cool, but then we were suddenly just in the green fields, and I was like, oh, okay, right. This is very unimaginative.
And then the walk into the sunset at the end with him and Connor was...
Yeah. And, he almost wanted to avoid any other... How about we go see Black Canary? No, let's not do that. I think that's a pretty fair one. Look, honestly, Stu, what else have we got for the Signal this week? I had an email from Michael Kellersham who's recommending a DC coming out called The Silencers, which apparently is a pretty cool, like it's almost like female vigilante sort of storyline. I said we'll definitely do it, the first couple of issues and check it out.
Yeah,
sure. I don't think it's out yet, but Michael just drew my attention to that.
Excellent.
So thank you for that, Michael. We just in terms of schedule of Signal. I'm doing with Jimmy. We've got a spin-off of Signal going to be on the same feed. You get it all. You had the first issue last week. We're going to be doing, Stu, get this. Are you ready for this? Green Lantern, Geoff Johns, run trade by trade, me and Jimmy Tursus. Jimmy's a huge Green Lantern guy. And Stu, looking over there, see my Green Lantern omnibus is out?
I do. See this Bible over here.
The big boy's brought his Bible out. And we're kicking off with Rebirth. So Jimmy and I, we're actually recording tomorrow, Stu.
Nice.
And it's going to be semi-regular, so just a recurring kind of thing. Stu and me will continue to pump out the hits.
Everywhere.
And, like basically like the Beatles, Stu. I'm calling me and Jimmy, we're very much the Highly Metal Traveling Wilburys, but whereas we're the Beatles. You know?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
I'm definitely okay with that.
If you're in the Beatles, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You're
just pumping out the hits. The common
as long as I'm not Ringo, I'm okay with that.
You're not Ringo, Stu. I'm John Lennon, you're Paul. We know that.
I'm very okay with that.
You're the cute one, Stu. I'm the, you know, I'm the tortured soul.
Yeah. died on the inside a few years ago.
the body's still, you know. The soul might be dead. What is it, Green Lantern? Like, oh, you know, I'm living without a soul. You're a hollow. Please. That's where the comic took a real dive. Edric and the Demon struggles for me, I've got to say. Edric for me has never brought a lot to the table other than confusion.
Yeah.
And when he starts rhyming, I really start turning off. look, obviously...
Right, so next week, we've got our big review. We've got Star Wars Last Jedi.
Star Wars Last Jedi! Woohoo!
So next week, we're going to have our full review, which means Dave gets to do his favourite recording spoiler-free reviews and then spoiler reviews.
Do we have to do that? Yeah, I suppose so.
Learning how to do that. Also, next week, we've got Superior Spider-Man, My Own Worst Enemy.
Oh, that's right.
Our trade of the week.
Cool. Dan Slott, the Dr. Octopus story.
Yeah, so early Dan Slott, before it started getting a little old.
I would say this is probably the peak of Dan Slott Spider-Man.
Peak of Dan Slott. We've given him quite a bit of shit in the show.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to go with a positive Dan Slott episode.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy. He can take it. And then the following week, we've got...
What have we got, Stu?
Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic Volume 1.
Cool.
So we're running with a big
I'm Star looking forward Wars to track. That.
Yeah, I'm hoping you really enjoy it. Yeah.
Have you read any of it? Have you started?
I've read a little bit.
Good stuff?
I'm loving it.
Okay, cool. Okay, well...
For those out there at the moment, Amazon has got a sale on. You can pick Volume 1, 2, and 3 up on Kindle for $10 each.
Sounds good to me.
It is dirt cheap.
And you said it's like a lot of pages, so they're big.
About 400 pages each.
Jesus, Stu, what are you getting?
If you're buying a soft copy, it's like $60, $70.
I mean, this is the same guy who, by the way, complained about my Punisher choice, which was about 400 pages. Maybe it was 500.
That's true. If only you hadn't asked me directly for Knights of the Old Republic. Maybe I'd have some tiny bit of sympathy
for you. I'm excited for it because my experience in Knights of the Old Republic is I spent about 10 minutes playing one of the games once. So every single time you've ever heard me say Knights of the Old Republic sounds good to me, it's based on 5 minutes on the game.
Yeah, I figured.
And believe you me, I didn't get much done in that five
minutes. So now we'll get 400 pages of Knights of the Old Republic.
400 pages later.
We can learn a little bit more.
Maybe we can be with Rian Johnson in the scripting process for the new trilogy, etc.
Who knows?
Also, Warners, I am available. Stu's available. We're ready to work as a team on the DC franchise movies.
Or solo. I'm happy to work solo or as a team. I'm not going to tie my boat too heavily to Dave Smith right now.
You're trying to cut me out of the deal, Stu?
Oh, no. Happy to work with Dave. Happy to work with Dave. But if someone offered me a contract without a Dave, I'd take that in a heartbeat.
What
too.
A sad day that would be. I kind of need Stu there to balance me a little bit, you know?
Oh, Dave definitely needs help to balance him. He's definitely unbalanced.
All right, listen, follow Signal on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You'll hear from us soon. Good night.
See ya.